miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, April 24, 2021. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are, living in a world where everything of any importance is owned by a mere handful of people. Oh, yeah. Probably 3,000 or 4,000 people own the majority of the assets on this planet, guys. Yeah. And that ain't no conspiracy theory. But I'm sure, you know, some of you are like, oh, but Scorpio, I own my house. Well, that's true. I'm not talking about, you know, individual properties or, you know, the corner market. Although they're working on that now, aren't they? Interesting how you can go to a big box store and it's pretty much COVID free. But those small restaurants and so on and so forth, muy peligroso, very dangerous. Yeah. And of course, you know, try not paying your property tax and see how long that property is yours. Yeah, but the long and short of it, guys, is we've been lied to about just how small the ownership class of the planet really is. We've been lied to about that, too. Well, we've been lied to about almost everything, haven't we? And, you know, I've been saying this for many months now on my show that the ownership of the world is in far fewer hands than we've been told. And, you know, I sort of came to this conclusion just by the simple fact that all of the major corporations have the exact same worldview and political stance, don't they? There is not one dissenting voice within corporate America or corporations across the globe, not one. And, you know, if the ownership of all these big companies were independent, like we've been told, we'd be hearing a whole diversity of viewpoints, wouldn't we? You know, different versions of what is acceptable and desirable, different political beliefs. But instead, we are fed a monoculture, a unified vision from all of the people who run corporations worldwide. And those who sit in the seats of power across the globe as well. There's been a few dissenting voices in terms of governments, but they often end up dead, like the guy in Tanzania and, you know, the president of Belarus, Lukashenko. He was almost deposed by a phony color revolution. And of course, he's been accused of human rights violations. Oh, yeah, baby. That's the go-to one, isn't it? But anyway, it really would not be possible if all of these corporations were independent, like we're told, that they'd all have the same viewpoint. It would not be possible because it goes against the basic aspect of human nature, diversity of thought. Not diversity as they tell us, but diversity of thought. That would be a natural consequence if we had independent ownership. And, you know, now this hypothesis that I've been talking about for quite some time is being supported by further evidence. And of course, I know this isn't my idea. This is, you know, ideas, I believe, really come into existence in the ether, man. But no, they do. And, you know, those who choose to embrace those ideas and are at the right vibration to catch a hold of them, that's how ideas are spread. It's not unique to any one person. And guess what? As the evidence continues to pile up, guys, guess what? The ownership of this world is overwhelmingly Jewish. Yes, overwhelmingly Jewish. Not bad for a tiny minority who make up, what, 2 or 3% of the population? Yeah, not bad at all, guys. Yeah, ITC Rolt in the chat there on StreamYard is saying, what about the MyPillow guy? Well, yeah, I think that guy is independent. But, of course, he's gotten himself in a whole mess of trouble now, hasn't he? Facing a billion-dollar lawsuit for questioning the veracity of this bogus election. But, yes, there are exceptions, of course. But, you know, as Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has put it, we are going through the purification of the oligarchy now. And by the way, he'll be joining us next hour to talk about the anti-Russian hysteria that continues and other things. But anyway, you know, looking into the way this system is actually structured and the ownership of it, more evidence is coming out. And it was like maybe a year ago that some Swiss researchers found that we live in an oligarchy and that the whole world is owned by, I think they said something like 2,000 corporations, 2,000 entities in total. And, you know, a good example of this is like, you know, competing brands like Coke and Pepsi. They're not really competitors at all. Their stock is owned by the same investment companies, investment funds, and insurance companies, and banks. And even governments have invested in these corporations. So think about it, guys. You know, this whole notion of competing companies, it's all smoke and mirrors now. And as they unveil this new system, this will become more and more self-evident to more people very quickly. Really, we live in a system of monopolistic capitalism owned by a Jewish elite oligarchy. That's what it comes down to, guys. Of course, it's not 100% Jewish owned, certainly not, but they are certainly vastly overrepresented, aren't they? At the very least. And of course, any non-Jews who enter this club must adhere to the same belief system, the same political worldview, and the same political ideology, or else you're out of the club, baby, and you're not getting back in. So yeah, we're looking into how this structure really works, and it's not a conspiracy theory, guys. Far from it. And of course, you know, two of the biggest investment firms in the world are BlackRock and Vanguard. And, you know, you can just go on Wikipedia and find out that BlackRock is like 95% Jewish run and owned. That's just a fact. It's not hate. You know, facts are not hate, guys. They're facts. Facts is facts. Yeah, and the way it's structured, too, is like, you know, the smaller investors are owned by the larger investors. And then those investors are owned by even larger investors. And if you look at the top of the pyramid, these two companies, Vanguard and BlackRock, They own an overwhelming majority of the assets on the planet, just those two companies. By investing in all these independently run companies. And, you know, even according to Bloomberg, a Bloomberg report states that these companies by the year 2028 together will have investments totaling over $20 trillion, guys. And that right there is the vast majority of the world's assets. Yeah, and of course, this Larry Fink character, he's the front man for BlackRock, and a whole host of other Jewish guys and gals run that company, guys. And this Bloomberg report about BlackRock even calls BlackRock the fourth branch of government. And, you know, this company actually works closely with central banks. I mean, this whole thing is becoming, you know, one big happy family. And BlackRock even lends money to central banks and also advises central banks, including the Federal Reserve. This is an incestuous relationship, isn't it? But that's the way this system is really structured. Not the fairy tale fantasies we're told about a free market capitalism, and all these companies are competing with one another. Oh, yes. I think that was true in the past, but we're well past that point now, guys. Yeah. And it's interesting, too, if you look into, you know, BlackRock employees, many of these people within that were high up in the company were in the Bush White House and the Obama White House and the Joe Biden White House. As cringeworthy as that statement is, President Biden, yikes. Yeah. And of course, what's interesting, excuse me, is that Vanguard is the biggest investor in BlackRock. Yeah. So this is like incestuous. It's really incredible how consolidated things really are. And we really are going through a purification of the oligarchy. We really are. And these two firms, BlackRock and Vanguard, hold a monopoly in all industries in the world, guys. I just pulled out, you know, Coke and Pepsi as a food example. But, you know, you've got every arm of corporations is structured the same way now. And this research is really starting to come out from multiple sources now, guys. People are really digging into the way this system is actually structured. And then, of course, the other piece of this puzzle is these foundations, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Open Society Foundation, and the European Journalism Center. It's amazing. You know, they're all interconnected now. Journalism is actually being paid for by these foundations because, of course, you know, news doesn't make money. It doesn't need to make money. It's the most important arm of propaganda to influence the great Goyim herd. And of course, once we start to look into this pyramid, you know, the Rothschilds are never far away, same as the Rockefellers. But, you know, just recently we saw this woman, what's her name? Lynn Forster de Rothschild got involved in this ridiculous thing about that, you know, the voting laws in Georgia. We can't have that. I mean, we just pulled off a great scam in Georgia, and we got to keep it that way. You know, calling the new voting laws the new Jim Crow. Yeah. But this Lynn Forster de Rothschild, she called together 100 of the top CEOs in the world. You know, imagine having all those guys on your speed dial, you know, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop. Get them all together on a conference call or in some kind of secret meeting and just essentially handed out the marching orders. And guess what? They all followed along, you know, Major League Baseball pulled out of there and, you know, Will Smith and some other lackey so-called stars that are just really employees of the oligarchy got involved too. And we're going to see more and more stars come out and tell us to get vaccinated and to help us get over any fear we might have about being vaccinated all the time. As this new system rolls out, they're going to sort of soothe us and help us understand. And, you know, if you look at the food industry again, you've got Nestle and a few other companies that really, if you look at it, they're all interconnected and they own the entire food service industry, guys. It's really that simple. The dots really are coming together now. And again, this is not conspiracy theory. This is people that are going through and looking at the ownership of these companies and how they're interconnected. This is how the system is actually run. It's really quite amazing. And this extends to medicine, entertainment, every industry you can imagine. It's structured the same way. Yeah, it's all incestuous now, guys. And like, for example, PepsiCo, which is a major player in the food service industry, you know, 72% of PepsiCo's stock is owned by 3,000, a little over 3,000 institutional investors. And if you look at it, man, all of these companies really have about that number. It's somewhere around 3,000 to 4,000 people are sitting at the top with the ownership of nearly the entire planet. And it makes sense how they can get this unified voice about everything. Oh, yeah. It's not a conspiracy theory, guys. Yeah. So that's the system, guys. It's really interesting, and the dots really are coming together. And, you know, another interesting thing here about this so-called pandemic we're in, you know, there's been a lot of evidence already put forth that this was planned a long time ago. And I found an interesting piece of the puzzle here. There's a book that came out in 1981 by an international banker, and some have described him as a eugenicist, but that word is really misused. Eugenics, the idea was to try to actually improve the human genetics, but the term's been abused so much, like Nazi. But anyway, this guy, Jacques Attali, and I'm sure I'm butchering this guy's name, French guy, maybe the Pope can school me and help me get the right pronunciation, but he wrote this book in 1981 called The Faces of the Future. And of course, before we go any further, this Jacques Attali guy is a French Jew. He's Jewish, guys. It even says so on his Wikipedia page, despite, you know, there's lots of other verification of that. But, okay, he's Jewish. You know? It's just, those are the facts, ma'am. And anyway, in this book, The Faces of the Future, and this guy's a heavy hitter, by the way. You know, he was president of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development and was an advisor to French presidents. And the guy's a heavy hitter. He's in the elite, the Jewish elite for sure. But let's take a look at what this guy said in his own words in a publicly published book. So again, we're not going into this world of, you know, secret sources and, I have secret intelligence sources that have told me this and that. No, this is a publicly published book. from 1981. And the fact that this came out in 1981 really gives a view into just how far back this kind of planning and thinking is really gone. So here's just a little quote from this guy's book, okay? In the future, it will be a question of funding a way to reduce the population. We will start with the old, because as soon as it exceeds 60 to 65 years old, a man lives longer than he produces and costs society dearly. And then the weak, and then the useless who do nothing for society, because there will be more and more of them, especially the stupid ones. So this guy's already calling for, you know, the elite were already thinking, hey, we've got to reduce the population in 1981. And I think that's around the year the Georgia Guidestones were put in place in the late 70s or the early 80s. So it all kind of fits together with a certain timeline. And by the way, this Atali guy is 77 years old now. He hasn't killed himself or decided to undergo euthanasia for the good of society. Always two sets of rules, aren't there, guys? Okay, and he continues. This gets better, guys. Check this out. Euthanasia targeting these groups. Euthanasia will have to be an essential element of our future society in all cases. We cannot, of course, execute people or set up camps. We will get rid of them by making them believe it's for their own good. That sounds a lot like this notion that we all need to be vaccinated for our own good and for the good of society. I mean, does anyone really think they cooked up this whole scenario with the only solution being a vaccine for our own good? Well, we're getting a real insight here as to what they really intend from their own words, their own books. So he even goes on and gets more explicit. We will find something or cause it, a pandemic that targets certain people, a real economic crisis or not, a virus that will affect the old or the fat. It doesn't matter. The weak will succumb to it. The fearful and the stupid will believe it and ask to be treated. There you go, guys. This is exactly what's happening today, isn't it? The only treatment is a vaccine, and we've got people lining up by the droves to take it. And in fact, future society is being organized around it, isn't it? And, you know, the last couple of days I've been reading that in Maryland and in California, almost every major university has already said, take the shot or you're not getting back into school next year. No college for you without the vax. And of course, it's the young people that really count in all this, isn't it? Getting them acclimated to the new system. Yeah, so this guy really lays it out, doesn't he? I mean, we will find something or cause it, a pandemic that targets certain people. Well, if I didn't know better, I'd think this guy was a prophet or something, you know, or, some kind of a psychic. No, this is just a little insight into the thinking of the elite Jewish oligarchy. And then this guy, you know, he published another book in 2006 that apparently was very well received and sold a lot of books. And even Henry Kissinger wrote a little blurb on it, stating that the book was both brilliant and provocative. And of course, you know, Henry Kissinger has been essentially a valet for the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, a loyal servant. And it's quite amazing. Then Atali wrote another book called The Weapons of Hyper-Conflict. And I mean, there's a lot of quotes from these that are just staggering. I'm only going to read a couple more. So The Weapons of Hyper-Conflict. So check this out, guys. In the next 50 years, new technologies will be developed by armies before being used on the civilian market for defense or police needs. Government will finance the research needed for perfection of the technologies of hyper-surveillance and security. Inversely, these technologies then will have civilian applications. In fact, the future weapons will essentially be founded on the concept of surveillance. Armies at once will develop digital infrastructure of nomadic ubiquity, surveillance systems for suspect movements by means of protecting strategic installations, and a network of economic intelligence. Robots and drones will relay data, detect chemical or biological agents, and serve as scouts ahead of infantry detachments faced with mined areas or blind spots. So what he's saying, you know, is like they develop these technologies for military use and then apply them to civilian use. And that, of course, is exactly what's happening, isn't it? Yeah, it's amazing when you go up the food chain, man, you're looking at a Jewish oligarchy. Not entirely, but it's hard to deny the existence of it once you really look into it. Amazing. Okay, well, with that said, I would like to bring on my co-host and my main man, Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, man?
Living the dream.
Okay. Looks like I've got an echo they're saying here in the chat. I'm gonna drop off and come right back. And we have Chris Brutal Honesty here too.
Brutal
man. Chris,
Honesty.
How are you, sir?
What's up, fellas? Hey, great intro, Dave. I caught it too. I dropped out a couple times. I was getting a bad echo, but I don't know. Maybe if you tried, it might work.
Okay, I'm going to drop out and come right back. Talk yourselves. I'll be right back.
All right. Yeah, Dave. Cool. Thanks. Great intro. Giuseppe, yeah, that's some amazing stuff. We've been hiding into that a bit about how long this stuff has been planned and lined up for us. And it has been departmentalized and called many different names, many different projects. You know, you can call it anything from the TPP to the One Belt, One Road to the Oded Yenan to the Kalergi Plan to the, one, you know, the UN agenda. You can name it a 50 million different things, but it's ultimately the same financiers using the same operatives towards the same meta goal. And, you know, it's mostly up to us to fight over what the proper noun to call it is instead of really dealing with the proper forces that are trying to put it on us.
Man, well stated. One quick correction, Scorpio, was a brilliant intro, as always. That you said the vile satanic chicken swingers were 2% of the population. That's the American population. Worldwide, they are 0.02% of the global population.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the clarification there. That makes it even more astounding. What happened to the diversity here, guys? That's all a front for the Jewish oligarchy to hide behind, isn't it?
You know, one fascinating point is that if the 0.02% overlords were benevolent, like Gaddafi treated his Libyan citizenry, I'd have no problem with that kind of control, but they're satanically malevolent and they need to be wiped out.
Well, yeah, it is interesting too. Like, the fate that Gaddafi suffered. And I just don't think they want people to be able to see how society could really be run for the benefit of the people in it rather than a tiny oligarchy, because he was really using the resources, the money from oil, to fund all kinds of programs just to help the average person. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, but I think Gaddafi sometimes gets a pass on like his benevolency, because he was kind of despotic and he was very tight, just like Saddam was within his own ranks, and very punitive to anybody that stepped out of line beneath him and tried to insubordinate him or undermine him. So I can understand why, because they probably would be influenced by the Western or the London banks and trying to undermine these regimes in the first place for the sake of resource extraction, et cetera. But ultimately, I think that the war has been against a populist government. And I think that's really why they have stepped in against anybody, whether they were a despot or whether they were a populist. You know, Hugo Chavez, Saddam, Gaddafi, pick a winner, pick any one of these people. They ultimately seem to go after them when the people are getting too much in return for their tax dollars and actually getting compensated for their time and their labor and learning and being educated. This is the thing. They don't want people to be educated. And if they do, they want them to be educated with their bullshit, stuff like Common Core, stuff that you can take, you know, the truth and torture it, or take statistics and torture them until they tell you exactly what they want to hear. And this is really not anything good for humanity. This is more like a plumbing narrative that is extremely friendly to the oppressors. And it really puts the onus onto the victims. You know, it really we bear the collective guilt, the collective punishment for the misdeeds of these oppressors and their overreach, you know, around the world.
One thing about Gaddafi you got to understand is he was dealing with very literally insane blood feud tribes, and he ruled tyrannically because that was the only way you could keep them all in line.
You need order. You're right. You do need order, especially in those civilizations over there. So I can understand, like you say, even like having some degree of order or justice or like, you know, capital punishment. I could even see these concepts if justice were a universal concept, not an asymmetrical one, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, I think just the concept of like, well, hey, the natural resources of the country should not just be all in private hands and used, you know, owned by a handful of people. It could actually be used to help create a civilization where, you know, people aren't constantly in fear of, you know, not having enough money to pay their rent. And, of course, Gaddafi's biggest two sins were he was going to make a gold-backed dinar that was going to essentially be used all over Africa, which would have really been a fly in the ointment. And he was tapping into primary source water.
Yeah, that water project was huge.
And he could, the whole country of Libya may have turned into a verdant paradise. I mean, but they don't want people to see the possibilities. We have to live from one emergency to the next. And, you know, isn't it just amazing going back to this French Jew that I was talking about earlier? Just essentially admitting, I mean, just laying it out. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how, you know, we're going to create a pandemic and we're going to get rid of old people. And I mean, it's just amazing how the whole plan was essentially probably hatched in the 1980s or probably before that even.
Dave, they've done this hundreds of times throughout history. This is why they get expelled from thousands of nations. This is exactly why. This is one of many reasons why. I mean, this and the usury, but usually one is a cover fire for the other. So ultimately, this is how they deal with these type of situations when the rabble come knocking. You know, this seems to be how they handle these things. Look at how they how many people were coming to the consensus and the arrival of this cabal was pretty much ruling politics and money and everything else. And then all of a sudden this convenient COVID thing breaks out. They crush the small business. They pretty much put everybody on the logistic infrastructure, like you're saying, you know, the InBev Unilever program, the Cisco program. They run out the farmers markets. They basically shut down your ability to use farming material and seeds, things like this, access to these things in the middle of a food crunch when they know this is coming. I'm saying at some point in time, people are going to have to look at all these factors and determine that this is a malevolent force that is directing these inverted public relations optics for help or health. You know, this is crazy.
Well, yeah. And as people are pointing out in the chat room, Gaddafi was very, very popular in his own country. And it took one of these bogus color revolutions to get rid of him and then actually have him murdered on the streets like a dog. Incredible.
You remember how many color revolutions they had right there in like 2010? They had probably 15, 20 countries all in a row in a matter of 5-10 years, all knocked down, all oil-laden countries, you know, from Yemen to Bahrain to like you say, Egypt, Libya, even Iraq again, Iran again. You know, I mean, man, they've gone after these guys so much. It's more than the Wesley Clark seven-nation memo list. And that's something that they wrote since what, 99 or 2000, something like that, or right after 9/11, they talked about this. So this is a long-term resource grab. This is a plan, a blueprint.
Hey, you guys, shout out to Captain Kirk. Yeah, a few weeks back, he turned me on to this little Illuminati subset called the Pilgrim Society. Have you looked into that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure, yeah. Jeff Rentz had a big thing on it. Here's the thing, you know, I think that's an interesting corollary there, but I think what happens is they use these different clubs, essentially, you know, a semi-secret society, and they use these different clubs during different periods. I think that was more powerful during the early 20th century. I'm not convinced that it's, you know, as powerful as it once was. You know, I think where the power base now is shifted into other areas like World Economic Forum and all this web of spiders that is controlled by the Gates Foundation and other foundations. But yeah, what were you gonna? What's your take on the Pilgrim Society, Giuseppe? And what do you think it does?
Oh, I haven't studied it enough yet. He just keeps throwing me little snippets like that lady. Butt Blast Rothschild is a member of the Pilgrim Society, and he keeps pointing out that these other players are. So there's still something going on there, the subset that is.
This goes back to the settlement of America. This goes back to the charter companies basically the guys that killed Charles I in 1649. These are the same people that brought in Cromwell and bring in the Commonwealths. All this thing, this is the communist agenda. These are the Jews of Augsburg coming through Amsterdam and then going into London. Yeah, this is absolutely the Pilgrim Society. And Dave, you're right. Every single generation, they come up with a new formation of religious operatives, whether it's the evangelicals, the Second-day Adventists, whether it's the Pilgrims, or whether it's the Harvard Divinity School, any of these type of offshoots, these Episcopals or any of these Anglican offshoots, are all run at the top by Masonic organizations without question. And they are pretty much it's seemingly innocuous to the adherents. They are certainly not represented to the adherents as a Masonic order, but there is an incestuous relationship with the leadership of every single religious offering in the last 300 years in this Masonic cabal.
Yeah, yeah. The Masonry plays a big role in this. And of course, all these little private clubs and private secret societies have overlapping membership.
Yeah,
a lot of these people are members of four or five different groups. Yep. And of course, that helps hide it. Again, this gives the illusion that there's all these different groups and, you know, they're all competing. No, they're all part of the same spider web, just like these corporations. The idea that all these corporations are competing, it's totally archaic thinking.
It's an oligarchy, Dave. You're right. And look at, like you say, if you were to cross-examine all the board of directors of these Fortune 500 companies, you'd find probably the same 10, 20,000 people on all these things. So you're absolutely spot on and right above the target. And furthermore, when you look into these 20,000 people or so, you'll find they all have Judeo-Masonic connections. They're all put into this order or this departmentalization process that really usurps power at the highest levels, the most pinnacle and crucial points of power. They'll have one of their operatives placed there and leave nothing to chance in terms of controlling that area, that thing.
If you think about it, though, there's only, like Scorpio so insightfully said in his intro, there's only 3,000 or 4,000 with actual control. It's actually a plutocracy. I mean, oligarchy means there's, you know, competing, but these are all owned by the same chicken swinging parasites.
Yeah, it's the Society of the Cincinnati, dude. It's all day. It's these same guys. They forge it so that nothing will be possible in terms of popular sovereignty, that democracy will be, you know, just a thing they just steer us into battle with. You know, it's certainly not a deliverance. It's an ideal. It's a rhetoric.
Giuseppe, that's actually a really important clarification you just made. I totally agree. That's right. That's a very good point. Very good.
Yeah, an oligarchy is a few competing corporations. There's no true competition. They're all owned by the same vile parasites, satanic parasites.
Competition's a sin. Yeah, look what they do with like any competitor. They run them out of town. That's what they're doing with small businesses. Any competition to Walmart or Amazon, they're getting them out of here, man. They're crushing them. Yep. Or they're forcing them to crush themselves by forcing them to comply with these ridiculous draconian quote-unquote health measures. Social distancing, wearing a face mask, vaccine passports, whatever this bullshit is. These guys are literally all in on together, and they are trying to push this forward using sports, using media, using the food supply, like you say. This is so despicable. People with integrity in crucial positions are going to have to step forward and put an end to this, or this is going to just lead out of control and morph into something that's unstoppable.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting. Giuseppe, I think we have the illusion of competition, guys. I think that's where we are now. We have the illusion of competition. We have the illusion that we have all these different countries with its own independent government. And if this one thing that this COVID hoax has taught us all is that all governments will essentially go into lockstep when they're told to. I mean, it's amazing the phenomena of people wearing masks all over the world almost instantaneously. I mean, it was like it happened within a month. Everybody around the globe was dancing to the same tune. And I wanted to bring something else up, you know, for both of you guys just to chew on and see where this goes. You know, this Philip Zelikow character has been placed on the COVID. On this COVID commission, and Zeke Emanuel is on there. It's just like it seems like this COVID Operation COVID is being run by, it looks like, mostly Jews. It came out a while ago that the heads of Pfizer and Moderna and the top scientists that developed these vaccines were all Jewish. This Walensky woman, the head of the CDC. She's definitely has a, you know, let's just be honest, kind of a rat face. Who's the other guy? There's another.
Charles Lieber.
Yeah, Lieber. And there's another guy, Slavik, I think his name is, that's always preaching to us about COVID. And it seems like this is really increasingly looking like a Jewish operation to cull the Goyim cattle. I mean, what do you guys think?
Bill Gates, crypto Jew. The husband and wife, head of Moderna, Turkish Jews. I'm sorry, of Pfizer, Turkish Jews. All the heads of Moderna, including their real life Dr. Mengele, that Zach Tal. It sounds like a Klingon from Star Trek. That guy's such a deviant. All Jews. I mean, who's running interference for all the Jew? Big Pharma is the Jesuit, pseudo Jew Tony Fauci. So this is completely Jewish controlled and completely intent on an open war to depopulate this globe.
So is the war of terror. If you think about that, probably ISIS, Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, Al Qaeda, they're all funded by the same intel agencies that are working towards the Greater Israel Project. And certainly trying to subjugate the citizens, not only under technocracy, but also under wage stagflation like they have for centuries now. So if these guys can use these fear tactics and use the official government formula blueprint, like you're saying, Dave, it is a cookie cutter thing. If they can use this everywhere under the UN legal structure and force this by military might, they're going to do it. And they're going to take everything from us that we allow them to take until we actually realize what is being done. Stop calling this thing something by a different name and realizing it for what it is and calling it out and stop fueling our own enslavement.
Well, it's so absurd. Think about it.
Go ahead.
In the late 1980s, a former Pennsylvania furniture salesman Benjamin Nutty A-hole writes this book. Oh, terrorism is going to be the new problem that the Western world's going to face. And then the Mossad starts acting like Arab terrorists. 1998, Project for a New American Century, all run by vile chicken swingers, writes, oh, wow, if the Greater Israeli Project would be so great, if only we could have a new American Pearl Harbor to focus the intent to support Israel, and boom, the Jews do 9/11 with traitors like Donkey Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and in 2001. And what do we have? We have weak-minded but well-intentioned American military as fodder for the Rothschild expansion from the Euphrates to the Nile. How can the average Mogoloid be so stupid?
Man, that's a good point, Giuseppe. And you know, they're buying into the political theater, the political kabuki theater that we're all supposed to watch and believe is real. And again, this comes down to phony choices, right? We've got the Democrats and the Republicans, but of course, the same people fund both. Obviously, we saw that in spades. But it's amazing how Biden has packed his entire cabinet, you know, like over half the cabinet are Jews, dual citizen Jews, and all the
just COVID, like Trump.
Yeah, and right, that's true. And the COVID operation is really run by Jews, and I can't prove it, but I really think Anthony Fauci is a crypto Jew. I want to look into it. I'm going to find evidence hopefully someday.
He looks like Mother Teresa's bastard kid, doesn't he?
Well, you know, yeah. It's not crypto. He's a de facto Jew. I mean, he's the Jesuits are essentially been controlled, as Chris is so accurately pointed out with historical investigation. They've been controlled by the Jews for centuries. So he's a de facto Jew. I mean, he's an Italian guy.
Is he affiliated with the Jesuits?
He's Jesuit trained inside and out. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Sure. Okay. And it's just amazing. This guy is on every news show every couple of days. I mean, this guy, it's incredible how that's the only guy we can hear, you know, he's the world's expert on this and that. And the only guy that the media goes to get, the future of COVID. It's just.
Yeah, either that or a hulking transvestite trying to identify as a woman, you know?
Oh yeah,
what a great adjective! A hulking transvestite just fills my heart with desire.
Yeah, Dick Levine, right? His real name is Dick.
But yep. This whole thing, whether you're talking the Chauvin trial and chauvinism, this is like a way that they play on like the subliminal subconscious of the viewers, the audience, with these words, these symbols, these nouns, these verbs, even these proper noun last names. Another thing I want to point out, you talk about Netanyahu. You know how he became famous? His brother was part of the hijack, shakedown, extortionism thing that they were trying to maximize in the 70s, you know, to turn away the focus from OPEC and many of the things they're doing with the petrodollar in the Middle East. And really what Netanyahu's brother was doing was they were taking the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot system and hijacking planes and landing them, and then basically making it look like they foiled a hijacker attempt of some radical Muslims. And in many cases, yes, shit was a little crazy. This happened a good dozen times or so. Mm-hmm. And then Netanyahu went on to that conference he put on in 1979 in Jerusalem about the terrorism shall replace communism in terms of the global threat. So these guys have used the Cold War since the war ended in World War II to play both ends against the middle for resource extraction, right? Just like they did with the War of Terror, just like they're doing now with this COVID thing.
Well, and, you know, this is an interesting correlation here. We had Netanyahu write a book, a Jew, of course, that all came true, essentially. Isn't that interesting? And they had PNAC to help make sure it come true. And then just like this French Jew, this Attali guy I was talking about earlier, he wrote several books essentially talking about what they're doing right now back in 1981. It's incredible.
Just like that horrible Fardry, the protocol.
And they somehow it manifests into reality.
The protocols, Dave. I was going to say that. Sorry to talk over you. But just like that horrible Fardry, the protocols the Elders of Zion, that is like almost a playbook coming true to the date, to the time, to the word. You know, and it's supposedly a fabrication, as they're going to say. Bullshit. These guys can only get caught so many times and cry victim or cry something else before people are going to have to start looking at it for what they truly are.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lark in Texas is making a good point here in the chat room on StreamYard. Through it all, one thing remains true. Slaves cannot own property. They are property. And that's really the basis of this new system. And they're even saying it. You will own nothing and you will be happy, or else.
You will be property. Yeah, you will be intellectual property of Microsoft once you take that vax, just like they did with the corn patents in Monsanto in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dirty, amazing.
Man. Monsanto. Giuseppe, go ahead. Sephardic Jews.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there seems to be a systematic consistency that they have in common. You know, they're trying to destroy the massive population, the world population, slim it down 90%. Like that meme Giuseppe had yesterday, you know, and the black dude's looking at the 90% depopulation rate and then the 90% vaccination rate. It's like, oh, damn. Right. That's pretty much what you're seeing here.
Giuseppe, you know that that meme you had up earlier about the Jewish heroes of vaccination, that's really an incredible meme. You know, I didn't even realize all these people that have been involved in this vaccination or quaxination program, as you like to say. How many of them are actually Jewish? I didn't know that Jonas Salk was Jewish. It figures. That's just amazing.
To the Pilgrim Society too, Dave. It goes back to, like, you know, Giuseppe's talking about Pilgrim Society. These guys were all involved with these vaccination things. These are the guys that were trying to push it off to, like, the royalty. King George III lost 2 or 3 kids to vaccinations alone. And these guys, like, are along with the Jenners and the Edwards family, you know, the founders of Princeton, the Ivy League schools, Harvard and Yale, the same group of people, man. They've been working on this eugenics program and this vaccination thing since the 1500s. Paracelsus and the Red Cross originally started under Habsburg rule. Who do you think handled Habsburg's money until they double crossed him in the 1700s?
Well, Giuseppe, maybe you could you comment on this role of Jews in vaccination? It's staggering. People that are listening to the radio can't see the graphic, but I'm just amazed that all the top people there are Jewish. It's quite incredible. Maybe you could comment on that.
Well, sure. I mean, essentially, as Chris has so lucidly pointed out, for centuries, the Jew has dabbled in genetic and societal control. I mean, it's unbelievable. So Jonas Salk, Jew, Simon Katz, this psycho Paul Offit, who runs the Philadelphia Children's Hospital and has publicly stated that vaccines are so safe that a little newborn could take 800 vaccines at once and have no ill effects. You know what? I'd like to see his grandkid. I'm willing to say, Paul, only give that your little parasite 400. How about that? Let's just cut it in half, and you give your little granddaughter or grandson 400, and let's see how they do, okay, Paul?
Well, of course, there's always two sets of rules, aren't they? He was talking about the Goyim children, not his own children, man. Just like this French guy, Jacques Attali, how we got to get rid of old people. Well, he's 77 years old now, and he hasn't euthanized himself or committed suicide, has he?
Yeah, lead the pack, man. Be honorable, you know? Walk the walk, talk the talk, right? You know, otherwise it's bullshit.
And there's compelling evidence that the Jew spread the Black Plague intentionally. I mean, there's very believable evidence that that is the case.
So many times. Giuseppe, they've poisoned so many wells, poxed so many people. This is not even funny.
Right.
I mean, this is what they really did with the natives and dividing them up into two houses. You know, the Abenaki and the Iroquois conference, the confederacies. Yeah, this is crazy. Right.
Yeah, Giuseppe, we should go into that on a future show, man, because I've looked at that too, and it's fascinating. Of course, you know, you go that far back in history, things get a little murky, but there is a lot of evidence to say that that was an intentional and the Jews were behind it. That's fascinating, man. Well, guys, look, this first hour is just whipped by. We're down to the last minute or so. I just want to let everyone know that next hour we're going to have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson coming on. We're going to talk about this Russian, anti-Russian hysteria and this bogus hunger strike by this Navalny character who's essentially, the next guy they want to bring in to take Russia to the slaughterhouse, essentially, like they had in the 90s.
He's the new Pussy Riot?
Yeah, right. Or the new... Well, the guy has all kinds of deep state connections. I think he went to Yale or Harvard. And we'll get into that and whatever else. Maybe just a final thought from both of you guys before we hit the top of the hour. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Well, I'd like to give a shout out to Mer Bailey, who instead of Oive coined the term Oinkve.
There you go. Yeah, shout out, Mer. That's good stuff. Hey, great show yesterday, Giuseppe. That was awesome stuff, man. That was really a great show. I was really thrilled to pieces to be a part of that panel, man. Great, great conversation.
Yeah, she is the real deal. And plus, Scorpio turned me on to an article where she's taking on the Canadian state. That's going to be a battle, man. I don't think she's going to lose. I hope not. Dr. Johnson, are you there?
I am here, my friend. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, excuse me, sir. Scorpio, and can you hear him?
Yes, I can. Dr. Johnson, can you hear me, sir?
I can hear you as always. No problem whatsoever.
Great.
Let's start off just by thanking you for coming back on the show. Matthew, you know, I always appreciate your insights and really your long history of fighting the good fight. You know, I'm just struck, too, by how this anti-Russian hysteria just keeps increasing. Maybe you could just comment on that or just see where you want to take it to start off.
Well, I've spent 30 years worrying about this topic. I'm an Irishman, but I am Orthodox, and I converted back in grad school after a very long struggle. But I was saying in the 90s, when Yeltsin was still around, when Russia had been reduced to a third world country, that Russia is the only country that has the size, the people, the resources, the anti-liberal background, the religion, to be the leader of the fight against, well, the New World Order, the Great Reset, whatever you want to call it. And I was absolutely right. When Putin was appointed in New Year's Eve of 1999-2000, I was the first to say that this man is one of us. Everyone else was saying, well, he's KGB, communist, all this nonsense, not realizing that the man had been baptized Orthodox as a young man, that his agenda was very different, that the old Marxist stuff was only taken seriously in American universities, maybe in Portland. And yes, that's probably true, you know, a few courtrooms. But in Russia, it had turned into, you know, from the 70s on, it had turned into almost a national socialist kind of a mentality. Coming out of the security services, he had his own background. He had his own supporters. He had his own community. He had his own source of income. He didn't need the Western-financed, Western-supported oligarchs. Back then, it was all Jewish except for one. That was Batonin. At Harvard University, State Department, all this. He didn't need their support, as Yeltsin had done. And the anti-Russian thing derives from the notion that Russia has this capacity. You know, I've mentioned Johnson's Law on this show before. It's going to come up again and again. My law of social science, where the more obscure the topic, the more obscure the country, especially, the more that the media can lie about it and get away with it, because there's simply too few people to say otherwise. You know, North Korea is the most extreme version of this. Additionally, the more obscure the country, the more the media can simply make mistakes and not realizing it and not caring, because how many people are going to say otherwise? I was studying the Burmese military government 20 years ago when I came up with this idea. I began to realize that the media reports were simply invented. And I said to myself, well, who's going to say anything? They'll at least say these reporters are not trained in foreign affairs. They're journalists. They don't usually leave D.C. or New York City. They usually go to Amnesty International or the State Department for their information. They never go to the government in question. And if you want to whip up hysteria about Russia, of course, being a white people is much easier to do. Well, they're doing it with China, too. It's not that hard. You could make up whatever the heck you want. You can say whatever you want. And it's going to be believed. How many people are going to be able to answer these accusations? Now, once you know, I mean, I read the language. I read the newspapers. It's a whole new world when you start reading American Russian press and Russian periodicals. But no one knows that. No one knows that here. It's a totally different world over there. Our kind of our point of view is mainstream there. So that's the basics of Russophobia. It started in the Crimean War in the 1840s, when Great Britain created this Mongol horde kind of nonsense, and it really didn't quite go away, except, of course, for the Soviet era, where you never had sanctions. You never had attacks on the USSR. They traded freely. The NATO powers built Soviet industry. They built Soviet electronics. Much of their weapons, automobiles, et cetera, came from Western sources. They were being educated in Western universities. Only when someone like Putin takes over, suddenly now you have sanctions all over the place. Soviet era was the only time where the ruling establishment in the West suddenly had no problem with Russians.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's really strange how all the liberals were quite happy with the Soviet Union. There's no sanctions. In fact, we actually helped the Soviet Union numerous times, keeping the government afloat. But what, why do you think they've continued with this, you know, Russian, his anti-Russian hysteria? Because if you just look at it from a geopolitical standpoint, you'd think that they would want Russia as an ally just because of the resources, the land. And of course, we're natural allies. It's a white Christian nation. What do you think is driving this against the own self-interest of America and the West? What's the force driving this, do you think?
Well, you packed a lot into a few words there. I don't believe we're natural allies whatsoever. America is a secular society, and I think in parts of it, it's still white. But but it's a power based on corporations, the sea trade, the whole Atlanticist idea. We're complete opposites from the land-based geopolitics of Russia. Now, Germany and Russia are certainly natural allies, which was a problem that Britain had to deal with in World War I. China and Russia are certainly natural allies. And, of course, I'm making reference to Dugin's theory of multipolarity, where you know, you have the sea-based empire, you know, coming from Phoenicia and North Africa to Venice and London, now the U.S., and the land-based empire, which would include places like China, Russia, and even India, maybe even the Islamic world for the most part. Jewish world, of course, being largely on the Atlanticist side, at least these days. And that's the concept I usually use to analyze this. And the U.S., you know, American Christianity is so badly watered down. It's so almost non-existent. It's based on the most extreme kind of Puritan models in the 17th century, which were bad even then, and have completely, you know, it has no content anymore. I mean, America is officially, at least as far as government policy is concerned, officially atheist, because you're not allowed to mention God or anything like that in any public event. That's, you know, you lose your tax exemption or anything like that if you do something like that. Mentioning God at a state-funded event is technically illegal, despite the constitutional protection. That's how they've interpreted the First Amendment. So we're not just natural. We are opposites. They were natural enemies. But the big difference here is that the U.S. is driving into poverty. The debt is unrepayable. There's no morale, certainly in the military. The country is literally falling apart. It has no industrial base. It has no ethnic or national unity whatsoever. It wasn't even founded as a nation. It's simply a dying society, invaded by all around it, especially from Latin America. Russia has been reborn over the last 20, 22 years. It's a completely different world. I'd say the same thing about China as well. If the U.S. has just signed its surrender document, and I talked about this at length with Afghanistan, and was driven out of Somalia, and had, you know, and once, you know, trying to be, people trying to drive the U.S. out of Iraq, which was a total disaster, the U.S. can't throw its weight around at all, not economically and not militarily. It's not a superpower at any level. And I've said in my book on Putin, my Putin's political theory, which I wrote back in 2012, that the American ruling class is a lot like, you know, Montgomery Burns, you know, from The Simpsons. If he lost all his money, he'd still walk around giving orders, you know, having no idea that no one takes him seriously anymore. The U.S. is threatening everybody, pulls out of every treaty it's ever signed, especially recently. No one trusts it. It has no gold. Its currency is almost worthless. And it's still demanding this and demanding that and sending its decrepit forces to be defeated in almost every engagement they're ever a part of. And of course, with a media that's going to lie and be told what to do, because they don't simply don't know any better. So this is a, you know, the U.S., if the U.S. couldn't beat the Taliban, it sure to hell's not going to beat Russia and China together, let alone separately.
Oh, well, that's a good point. Yeah. And, you know, in some ways, Joe Biden is a very good symbolic representation of what America is now, a feeble old man who's senile and deeply corrupt. And when I was saying Russia and America are natural allies, I was actually saying America, let's say 100 years ago, when America still had traditional Christian values and was majority white. But of course, now the description you give of America is absolutely accurate. And I would also agree that America's military is totally demoralized. It's hard not to think this is being done on purpose, putting, you know, transsexuals, lesbians, women at the top of the food chain. And it just seems to me it's deliberately going to demoralize any military structure and of course, feminize it as well. And, you know, the military isn't a social justice fighting league. It's there to defend the nation. And you have to have a masculine military. And if you look at the footage of the Russian military, it certainly is not a feminized institution.
I have I can't tell you the number of papers I have on exactly this topic. But when the American military fights for a liberal leftist power, therefore, sooner or later, it's going to become a liberal leftist institution. The military top brass has been purged so many times. End of the Bush administration, the end of the Obama administration. Any general or admiral who had any political opinions at all was forcibly retired without any good reason given. The military budget is well over $1 trillion because what's on budget is only a piece of it. There's a lot of stuff off budget, a lot of stuff that they hide elsewhere. And no one has any idea where this money goes. The U.S. Navy is quite literally falling apart. The training has gone down to absolutely nothing. I have papers on what's going on. The U.S. Navy, the ships are always crashing into things. They're killing civilians accidentally. There's so much being demanded of them with fewer and fewer men, lower and lower quality men. And, of course, everything that you're mentioning. And, of course, on top of all this, as I predicted 10 years ago, you have the greatest desertion crisis since the Civil War. If you remember, we used to put on Facebook all those pictures of these military guys holding the paper in front of their faces, saying, I didn't join the army to fight, you know, the good guys. I didn't join the army to support heroin dealers in Afghanistan. I was putting those up. I couldn't keep up with them. There were thousands of those guys. And I think now, of course, the answer is to rely mostly on mercenaries, which is not being talked about very much. But they're not a particularly disciplined group, and they're not subject to any rules of engagement. They tend to lose anyway. And then, of course, you have the question of the embedded journalist. This was a debate, so-called, in the 90s, quietly went away and just imposed. You're a journalist covering a military operation. You're embedded in an American military unit. That means everything you say has to go through the commanding officer. Then it has to go to the Pentagon. From there, it goes to your editor. From there, it goes maybe into the paper. So you can't believe a syllable of what you're getting on the American press on these things. It is an open and accepted concept of military censorship. Now, you think about what happened in Vietnam, how the press acted in the total opposite way. They couldn't wait to expose every foible, every error. They lied. The Tet Offensive was a loss, that kind of thing. The Cambodia stuff. They invented, so the My Lai massacre, which was almost entirely invented. I have a paper on that. And consider how it is now, in World War II, where you couldn't even show dead GIs anywhere, where in Vietnam they were everywhere. The difference between these things is that in Vietnam it was a communist, leftist enemy, and the ruling class had no interest in fighting them. They had no problem with it. People in government may have had a problem with it, but the ruling class as a whole did not. World War II, and more recently, the targets were nationalist and or religious power. That means now the left, as it's always been, is the war party. The left is the one who's demanding constant military intervention. And that was always the case from the French Revolution onward. that the left was a militaristic, extremely violent group, but that got muddied during the so-called Cold War. Now we can't fight communists. So then they suddenly became the Peace Party. Now they're back to being the War Party again because the proper enemies now are being targeted. But the same military that's being sent to fight for feminism and free trade and abortion in Afghanistan, and thank God they failed, in Afghanistan and Iraq, itself has to become a leftist institution. You can go to any Air Force, Army page, they'll show you all of the Black Lives Matter pages that they sponsor, all the feminist stuff, the homosexual pride parades that they have, the flag that was actually flying at a base in Afghanistan for a while, which of course does nothing for their support abroad. It is a leftist, just one more leftist institution. If you say anything, you are retired. They got rid of everyone. At the end of the Obama administration, he had a mass purge of admirals and generals, even a few colonels. And don't get me started on the service academies, which is were absolute disasters, academically and every other way. But Obama, Bush to some extent, purged thousands of these guys, which means for years now the upper brass has been incompetent. It's based on political appointees. It's in chaos. No one knows who's going to be there for long. Everyone lives in terror that they're going to say the wrong thing. It's been pure chaos. And you get what you get. That explains in part the American military record, which is a total disaster.
Yeah, that's very, very good points. And, you know, I thought your description of exactly how the press works within the military, totally controlled. That's an excellent description of it. And of course, now, you know, the military is learning about the dangers of Pepe the Frog and white national extremism. So they're all being brainwashed to hate the very people that, you know, are the majority population. Let's get Giuseppe and then Kristen here. Giuseppe, go ahead, man.
Well, I'd like to ask Matthew about the following scenario. I think that the United States is still very useful to the internationalist Jew and the Rothschild globalist banking cabal for the following reasons. One, the Jew control of Hollywood allows for a global mind control initiative, and two, the U.S. military is a very effective mercenary force for the greater Israeli project. And three, the rigged control of the kosher casino is very attractive to the wealth worldwide to come in and gamble and usually be guaranteed winnings if you bet with the kosher house. And four, there's still a really good cash cow profit stream from the clueless American consumer. To me, those are the four main reasons that we're still allowed the illusion of an empire.
It's hard to disagree with a lot of that, although, you know, those have been the four pillars for some time. You know, the military threat has faded. It's not being used like it used to be. In the Syrian case is a classic example. They simply don't have the money, they don't have the men, and they don't have the public support to use it very often or very effectively anymore. Despite all that, they're still spending billions on brand new aircraft carriers, despite them being obsolete. And the new Zumwalt version of the battleship, which, you know, these are more ego projects than anything else. Russia and China have gone far and away past the U.S. in terms of technical ability in fifth-generation weapons. The consumer is something that I worried about for a long time. You know, the only reason that the dollar ever mattered, the only reason that the Chinese were willing to play nice, for example, is that you could, you know, the American consumer will buy anything. That was the one weapon that the U.S. had, was our consumers could make you wealthy because they'll spend themselves into oblivion. Well, that credit has dried up. The credit simply isn't there anymore. You know, the public sector debt right now is roughly $20 trillion. Private sector debt is about the same. Private sector meaning, you know, credit cards, mortgages, you know, car, you know, everything like that. You know, it's still $17, $18 trillion. There's not enough dollars in the universe to repay that, even if it had value. Not to mention the gold leaving America and going to Russia. The U.S. has, you know, the gold that was in Fort Knox are pieces of paper that claim to be ownership of gold. That's what gets traded on the gold market. So you know, the casino capitalist stuff, you know, there's no production. The American GDP is based for something like 60% on financial derivatives and things like this. I think that the Americans are in such a position that they could go into a complete depression, as we've been for many years, at least since 2008, total free fall, and the American population won't even know it. They live in a fantasy land. They redefine what unemployment is. They redefine what inflation is. They redefine even what money is. Now they're trying to take over the crypto market, which I never quite understood. It's never been my thing, but now that's no longer a threat to them, as far as I can see, at least the main ones. So those pillars, and I go, you know, I've also called the, you know, Israel and the Middle East. Israel's the U.S. Israel's at least New York City and Washington, D.C. That's really the Jewish utopia. The Jewish utopia goes from place to place to place. New Khazaria is parts of Ukraine. They actually do call it that, the largest synagogue in the world. I think it's in Odessa. They actually are calling that on very close to the original Khazaria, which is why it's a colony of the U.S. But I think New York City has always been Israel in the true sense of their version of the word. But just like in the 1970s Soviet Union, they saw things falling apart. The construction that the U.S. financed after World War II was already falling apart. When something starts depreciating, it starts exponentially depreciating. They started jumping ship, coming to America, going to Israel, which is why you have this resurgence of some variation of nationalism in the 80s over there. And, of course, what Putin is doing now comes directly out of that. And I think the same may be happening here. I'm not entirely sure where they're going to go. Because as it stands now, Russia and China, to a lesser extent India, I'm not sure, but Russia and China are well aware of that movement. You know, the Russians have taken over their central bank. It's now a state institution. It's a long story. It was very quiet, like in South Korea. Chinese voice had a state bank. They're both now moving explicitly to a social nationalist or national socialist model of government. I'm not really sure where – I mean, the Great Reset is probably that elite, you know, the Bilderberg group. That's their last gasp. Yeah, they're willing to forgive debt in exchange for assets. They did it in Ukraine. They did it all over the place. That's what the IMF does. But doing it in the U.S., that's what the Great Reset comes down to. So all this massive public-private sector debt, well, they'll forgive parts of it, the student loan nonsense, all that. But they're not going to do that for nothing. I mean, these guys are openly, actively talking about the gig economy, no more employment contracts, you know, piecework here and there. They're talking about literally not owning, right on their website. At the Davos Forum, talking about that ownership is a bad thing. You'll rent and you'll be much happier. They're going to start taking assets en masse, and they've done it before. That's as far as right now is concerned. That's their kind of maybe medium-term plan. Other than that, you know, they're in a lot of trouble, and I think they're aware they're in a lot of trouble, and that would explain their lashing out all the time, whether in foreign policy, arresting people, railroading people in court. You know, banning every damn thing. That doesn't sound to me like a secure ruling class. That sounds like a ruling class in panic.
That's a great point. Let's get Chris in here with a question. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I don't really necessarily have a question. Maybe I do. But yeah, I agree. I think they are panicking. I think they're crapping their pants. I think that they can only pull this Ponzi scheme off in so many places around the world at the same time before people start catching on and calling it out and pointing it out. So, yeah, I think it's important to point out, Giuseppe was earlier talking about the Pilgrim Society. I think that, you know, if you look into like Harvard's connection with the looting of the former Soviet Union in the early late 80s, early 90s, around the time that Yeltsin came in and right before that, it was mostly like Summers and Sachs. I think he was the CEO of Harvard maybe at the time, and also the World Bank. They were working on behalf of that. They went in and pretty much participated in the Yukos and Gazprom scams and many of the stock scams that they were doing, the bread for stock and bread for oil scams you hear about, and really duping the citizens out of their natural mineral and resource rights, you know, by deception and through this type of hardship after the wall fell and the destabilization hit the country. Well, what I want to say, though, is Putin came in and at least lent the optic of diligence and went after some of the KGB oligarchs that were running these type of scams domestically. And many of them sought shelter in London and Israel after the fact. Khodorkovsky and Abramovich are two that come to mind right off the top of my head. But anyways, at some point in time, do you think that like Summers, after his involvement with many things, like not only the looting of Russia, but many of the scandals that have happened in America and things that have gone on even with recently with Harvard and its overreaches and many other instances, do you think these guys are ever going to pay the price or do you think they're ever going to have any sort of repercussions? It seems to me that there's a group in the middle that's playing this two different civilizations against each other like they did with the Cold War. And they're starting to form a Cold War 2.0, like with the BRICS being on one side of it and then the IMF World Bank being on the other. And I think that they're really overseeing the looting of America and the transitioning of assets into some of these new world empires that they're building over the last 100, 200 years. They put them both under things what they call the century of humiliation, as well as basically – condition them into this communistic, socialistic approach over the last 200 years, both these countries, Russia and China. So I think you're going to try to use them moving forward because they've disciplined the next generations to their plan. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I said the last time I was on the show, or maybe it was 2 times ago. I have several papers on the Harvard issue. In fact, I mentioned that the State Department sued Harvard over the misuse of federal funds, rigging the privatization scams in Russia, even parts of Ukraine at the time. And they shut down the Harvard Institute for Transition Economies. And they tried to shut down the entire economics department at Harvard. Sure. We talked about that at some length. It's not in a book yet, but I do have it in article form all over the place. So there you have the federal government having and saying you're simply suing them. Now, of course, all these professors are still there. They have a great reputation. They were found guilty of every white collar crime you could think of, including almost genocide. And it doesn't affect anything. Lawrence Summers was president of Harvard at the time. Not only did he oversee the genocidal destruction of the Russian economy, but he was the origin of some of the bailouts in the American economy. And yet he still goes from elite institution to elite institution. He is still considered a brilliant mainstream man, despite everything those guys touch being failures. The Harvard is still considered this wonderful place of education, despite it being an absolute joke in terms of classes and professors not teaching and everything else. But every once in a while, you know, so they can get sued but and lose. Harvard paid, I can't think of his name, starts with an S, the professor there who's still there. They paid his like $3 million fine. Anything else, these guys would have been humiliated. It didn't even affect their tenure. And Summers just went to several other institutions. No, what Summers did, I'm pretty sure I mentioned on this show last time or the time before, was when the heat was on, that was about 10 years ago, I think, Summers then went in press conference and said that women weren't as good at math as men are. Now, why would he do that?
I remember that.
All of a sudden, the press isn't worried about the lawsuit anymore. All of a sudden, everyone's up in arms. How could he say? Of course, he doesn't believe that. He's a feminist like the rest of them. But the point was to get all the attention off of this humiliation. And that's why he did it. So it's that easy for them. And they were outraged in every newspaper. Suddenly, no one cares about this, that the State Department almost shut them down. And now everyone's talking about that one throwaway comment, which, of course, to them is far worse than destroying an entire economy and killing God knows how many people. If the system is going to fail, it's like the USSR in the late 70s, in the mid-80s, it's going to fail under its own weight. The USSR went from, as far as most people knew, especially what the CIA knew, as a monolithic, almost prosperous empire in the 80s, which is what the CIA told us, to complete destruction and collapse overnight. It wasn't a shot fired or anything. That's never happened before. It shows you how useless academics are. No one saw this coming. It happened overnight. And of course, they still can't deal with the actual causes of it. So if it can happen there, it could happen here. And for a lot of the same reasons. That's the only thing. The dollar is losing value to the point where it can't. It's being artificially propped up through quantitative easing and everything else. the inflation that's going to come out of this massive money production over the last 2 years, certainly since COVID, is going to have a massive, giant impact. You can't just, you have no production and that you pumping trillions of new dollars into the system. And yet you don't have economists talking about inflation. That's the very definition of inflation. And they'll lie about the numbers anyway. But eventually you can't keep that up, which is what happened in the USSR. You couldn't keep lying about your production quotas and targets. You can't keep lying about, you know, your purchases of raw materials. Eventually it's going to catch up. And in this case, you have no faith in the system. You have no faith in its military. You have no faith in the political system. No one takes it seriously anymore, except for a few political science professors, as far as I can tell. You have Time magazine coming out and admitting that the Biden election was a total fraud. They used the word conspiracy several times, cabal several times, that the whole thing was based on fraud. They admit that in the open. So right now, I'm willing to say that they're in the stage of asset stripping. Production isn't, you know, they'll talk about GDP growth, which is mostly fictional, mostly comes from financial derivatives. But if you look at other things, inventory that doesn't move, cargo that doesn't increase, trains and trucks that are not growing in volume, you start realizing that nothing is happening. I don't care what the numbers say. Those things tell us. You have oil right now, which is still about, you know, almost $0. As far as I can see, the last time I went to the gas pump, it's still over $3 a gallon. That means it's pure profit. Just a few months ago, it was in negative numbers, meaning it costs more to store the oil than to sell it. And yet, I don't recall gas going below $2.95. That's pure gouging. It's pure profit. This is what the regime is based on. It's not even economics anymore. These bailouts, which have now become normalized. The printing of money, whether laughable. At the same time, you have Russia and China. You have the new Silk Road project. You have actual production and strong national identities being built over there. The total opposite of what's happening in the West. And if that's not enough, you have now, thanks to the stupid sanctions, they have their own credit card processors. They have their own state banking system. They have their own business communication systems. They used to use the SWIFT from Belgium. Now they have their own. The mirror system. The thing is, Western banks now want in. They recognize that they don't trust their own system. I had to go on this Russian language mirror page, and I'm looking at this, and I see Citibank. I thought there were sanctions on this country. Citibank wants into the mirror system. Now, I have the feeling they're going to get the finger, but knowing how, you know, that's why the, you know, new prime minister has been installed, because he is an accountant, he is an economist, he knows all about this. These people have no faith in their own economy. The economy that's made them trillions, they have no faith in it. They're looking to get into this Belt and Road project, but they can't because of these sanctions. So they're creating shell companies and doing everything. That they don't believe in their own system. And of course, no one's talking about this. No one even understands this kind of thing. So, you know, that's where we are. And that's why I don't know how long this has left. But if the Soviet Union is any example, and it is, it can't be too much longer.
That's fascinating. Chris, you've got a lot of background noise coming in from your side. So try to mute if you're not talking. OK, it sounds like an air conditioner or something. Those are some great points. You know, earlier you mentioned Harvard and some of the duplicity going on there. And I believe that this Navalny character was educated at Harvard, correct?
Did we talk about this last time? I can't remember now. I'm on so many places, I can never keep them straight.
We briefly. Yes. I'm just bringing it up because I wanted you to comment on this phony hunger strike that he was. I guess he stopped it yesterday, and you know this martyrdom they're trying to create around him, and this whole superstar persona they're trying to give this character. Maybe you could comment on the this phony hunger strike.
Well, you mentioned. Well, I'll talk about that just in 1 second. It is. You're right. It's phony. It's supposed to be 24 days. I don't believe a word of it. If this man was poisoned by something as severe as Novichok, he ain't going on a hunger strike. But but these color revolutionaries. Now remember, a year ago, no one in Russia ever heard of this guy. His electoral, what little electoral background he has, it's about 1%. All these color revolutionary guys, first of all, are extremely unpopular in their own country. But every one, I can't find an exception, is educated in the U.S. When Navalny got his first conviction, it was a perfect, I know the case, very legitimate, no one talks about it. He was very lightly punished. And after that, he gets a scholarship to Yale. But you keep going on. I mean, Ghani in Afghanistan, Saakashvili in Georgia went to Columbia in Georgetown. Ghani went to the American University and he went to Columbia. Even Abdel Sisi in Egypt went to or the Army War College in Carlisle. He was replaced by Mohamed Morsi. He went to USC. One of the opposition against Mubarak in Egypt went to NYU. That's Mohamed El Baridi. In Venezuela. I mean, I can go on and on. Guaido in Venezuela went to GW. Every one of these guys is educated in the United States. They all speak English. They have almost no basis in their own country. I did a show with Sven Longshanks on Thursday about the former prime minister of Estonia, who wants to ban Russians, period, Russians as such, from ever entering the EU. Russians, period. And it has a lot to do with the COVID, the Czech explosion, all that nonsense, which is, you know, with anyone else would be a racial thing. Russian last name is all you need to be banned. Anyone is banned from the EU. The man was born and raised in America. He speaks his own language with a heavy American accent. The guy went to a high school in New Jersey. Even calling the guy Estonian or Swedish is laughable. These people have far more in common with the U.S. than they do with their own countries. Whenever these guys actually run for office, they get, 2-3%. But somehow they're parachuted into positions of presidency, prominence, military support. The whole thing is an absolute scam. Now, Navalny is just as bad. I have no idea what this man to be, He went to the Third World University, which is a very odd thing. Forget his law degree, which he never used, by the way. He went to the it was a law school in Moscow for Third World visiting students. I don't know why he went there. But after this, he gets convicted of something. He gets recruited by the CIA, Yale University. And why he got the scholarship, he had no real academic background other than that. Why would Yale be interested in him? I mean, it's like a conveyor belt for these guys. And he goes back to Russia and he gets these very high profile positions. He runs an ad firm. He runs a political consulting firm. He runs a firm where private sector people can deal with the bureaucracy and the public sector. Where the hell is this money coming from? How come no one even asked this? Every one of these, European human rights organizations, everyone, which is why Putin banned them in Russia, is financed by American corporate capital. Every last one. But Navalny is extremely unpopular. He's never pulled more than 2-3%. The guys in Belarus, I just did a show on that on Tuesday. Those two idiots, a husband and wife team, were bloggers. Even now, they have no more than 200,000 subscribers on their YouTube page. That's all they had done before this. It's not even like they can't even get decent people. And it's almost as if they're showing their power by taking these people that everyone hates or that no one's ever heard of and putting them in positions of tremendous prominence. On and on and on, this has happened in every color revolution country against a government that usually is very, very proper and very good and very prosperous. They're absolute nobodies with no popularity. Every last one. They're hated there. Most people have never heard of them. They don't even speak the language in some cases. It's almost a mockery. And this is how it goes. The American academic system, as you suggest, is very much a part of this. This is why I use the word regime. The word regime is the ruling class. It includes government, but certainly isn't restricted to it. Regime would include academia, would include finance, would include services, it would include media, entertainment, Hollywood, etc., even the music industry. And they get together in these groups like Bilderberg, and they make policy. That's the whole point of these, or there's hundreds of these organizations like that. So Navalny is no different than any of these other people. You have a man who polls, as of a few months ago, and the Levada Center, which is an American financed institution, polled between 5-7% approval. Putin has never gone under 74% in his entire career. Same thing for Lukashenko in Belarus. This man was never considered a threat. This man couldn't. No one ever heard of the guy. Why is he going to go through all this trouble hurting someone who had no capacity to do any damage? Putin's the most one of the popular politicians in the world. So the whole story and the poisoning stuff, you know, have you heard about the Czech, the explosion of the Czech munitions dump in 2014 that just resurrected? I don't know if you know that story.
No, go ahead, tell us.
Well, that's what the, I just did a whole show on this. It's the guy I mentioned who wanted to ban Russians from the EU. He used this as an excuse. 2014, there was an explosion at a Czech Republic munitions dump. These munitions were from a private arms dealer. They were going to go both to Syria and Ukraine to fight Russians. At the time, 2014, they said it was an accident. Just the other day, out of nowhere, they've discovered that this was Russian sabotage. And they blamed the exact same two people who bungled the Skripal Novichok poisoning in England a few years ago. Apparently, they only have two guys who do these kind of operations. The same two guys. Novichok is one of the most toxic chemicals on planet Earth. The tiniest little bit of it could wipe out anyone in a short radius. And yet, all these guys survive. How did this man survive? But you're going to use them again to blow up an ammunition dump in 2014 that only you just discovered now? So now, you know, they're trying to stop the Nord Stream project. They're trying to stop Russian investment. They're trying to kick Russians out of European capitals. They're pulling their diplomatic personnel out of Russia and vice versa. Using the, I mean, they were rifling through the newspaper trying to find something to blame the Russians on, and that's what they came up with. And they used the same two guys that bungled the Skripal poisoning a few years ago, which never even happened. The same two guys. They could come up with better stories than this. They could. The ISIS crap. That's not even – the photoshopping isn't even good there. I could do better than what they have. They can do better than this. The Russia collusion story was so bad. They could do better than this, but they don't. They don't because they're gauging how much they could mock the intelligence of the American public, which, you know, I could have told them that, how easy that is. And you have political scientists, and you have scholars, and you have politicians, and you have talking heads on TV pompously pronouncing this the exact same State Department nonsense on all of this without asking a single critical question. That's power. That's something that no political science degree could really prepare you for. But that's what's happening. And Navalny is just one ingredient. You know, he has all the same features of everyone else they use all over the world. A disaster personally. The People's Friendship University in Moscow used to be Patrice Lumumba University. It's only for third world students. Why the hell did he go there? Probably his academics weren't very good. He never acted as a lawyer. But my God, he has a constant stream of money. No one knows where it's from. No one bothers to ask this. When he was convicted of corruption yet again, the European Court of Human Rights claimed to nullify his case, saying it's all political. Except they never even looked at the case. They had a pre-prepared speech, how they're, you know, they say it's all fraudulent. He didn't do anything wrong, and no one asked about it. What do they know about it? They're in Brussels. What is going on here? It's so bad. It's so ignorant. It's based on absolutely, you know, the slightest shred of critical thinking can't be involved in this, and yet no one says anything but us. And, God, I've been at this for so long, you know, I'm getting tired. It's the same crap, and I got the same arguments in the same debates. My Lord, you know, I'm at a point now where we're not even speaking the same language as some of these people. Logic is now considered this masculine imperial concept that we can dispense with. And this is just that's where we are right now. But it's precisely because of that absurdity that we should be in a good mood about this, because the system will collapse under its own weight.
Absolutely. And it really does seem like they're mocking the intelligence of the American people, and it seems to be working. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in with a question, man? Go ahead.
I'd like to ask Matt what his thoughts are on the vile traitorous dual citizen and Talmudic Satanist Victoria Nuland and her years of involvement in the Ukraine, and especially now that Biden's back in, do you see her as being able to create a situation where the Ukraine becomes a proxy war of the U.S. versus Russia?
Well, I think that's kind of old news at this point, although I do think that your description of Victoria is a little bit too diplomatic for my taste. you don't have to sugarcoat this stuff because, yeah, that's a very, very calm way of putting it. You know, and I've dealt with her back in 2014, the Ukrainian riots and everything. By herself, she's an absolute nobody. She's as ignorant as they come. You know, when you're simply doing the bidding of powerful people, why the hell are you going to read? Why are you going to work your butt off to understand this stuff and languages and everything else if you're just going to do what you're told? What the hell's the point of that? So these people don't really know anything. You ask, you know, I've seen press conferences and everything else. She just spouts one cliche off after another. She's just somebody with no soul and no intelligence that's able to spout, you know, like a trained monkey, which I think was the Russian description of her at some point. I forget. I think it was Lavrov said something like that. I think it was, or Shoigu. I can't remember. And that's really all it is. You know, I mean, we don't envy these people. They simply, you know, they're like, God, you know, they're like Wormtongue from Lord of the Rings. You know, they have no ability except deceit. They're simply an empty suit. And it's not like we just disagree with these people. We have no respect for these people. And they get paid very, very well for doing very little. So by herself, it doesn't make any difference. All these people that Biden has brought in, all the women who run the Defense Department, you know, most of them aren't even in the field. I've read some of their papers when the transition team was first announced. My God, you know, it's this cliche stuff. It wasn't even a big deal in the 80s. People get pushed through everything, and they do what they're told, and they get rewarded for it. All this whole group of people. You have people above them that are far more powerful. The proxy war has been going on for a long time, except it's pretty much already been lost. You know, in 2014, early 2015, the Ukrainian army fell to pieces. Most of the POWs that were taken by the Donetsk Republic were from Georgia. There was a few from Poland. I think there was one from the Czech Republic. Usually the Ukrainians, you know, Russia is generally well regarded, even in Western Ukraine, contrary to popular belief. You know, these soldiers weren't going to fight for a fourth world oligarchy. They were deserting, not just deserting, they were deserting to Russia. And when one of their top generals literally ran from the battlefield, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, when he ran from the battlefield, he ran all the way back to Kiev and said, the Russians have invaded us. That's why I couldn't stay. So that's where that rumor got started. So they try to justify their loss to these militias in the east who have won by claiming that the Russians invaded. Now, that's, you know, considered historically incontrovertible. And, of course, it isn't true. This would be the first invasion in human history that no one noticed. I'm pretty sure you'd have a picture or two of columns of tanks coming across the border. It never happened. I was the first to make a big deal about this. I was the first to translate the Declaration of Independence and Constitution into English in Donetsk and Luhansk. These are our people. You know, they're talking about, you know, usury and everything else. And they're the royalists. These are extraordinary. They were drafted many years ago. They all have military experience, and they're up against an enemy that didn't want to fight. The Ukrainian army, you know, never really came into its own. They were part of the Soviet army. Now they want to be a part of NATO. You know, they had very few men. You know, to be a part of NATO, they would have to spend billions and billions. You have to have total functional equivalence with the other NATO forces. They don't have the money to pay their water bill, let alone this. And the West is kind of sick and tired of this, writing these checks, the money they're never going to see again, to support, you know, what could have been one of the most prosperous societies on Earth. That now, according to mainstream sources, it has about the same investment climate as Ghana or Mali. Well, the proxy war has been going on for a while, but, you know, it's really a lost cause. And I've been writing on this for so long. My book on Ukrainian nationalism, which came out early last year, the last third of it has to do with these with these conflicts. This is one of these cases where the good guys won. One of these cases where you have a separatist group who wouldn't tolerate the Western interference, and they defeated all comers by themselves, despite all the support from the West and all these secretive mercenaries and everything that they parachuted into the country. They still lost. Wow. So, and of course, in Crimea, you know, Putin is popular probably in nowhere else than Crimea. His popularity rating is something like 85%. They voted 98% to join Russia, as any normal person would. Ukraine's currency has no value. The minute they switched over to the ruble, all their salaries and bank accounts quadrupled in value. China is coming in and redoing their ports. Russian investment is pouring in there, while Ukraine is simply nothing more than a backwater colony of the United States. Crimea is a tremendous success story, which is why they constantly have to harp on it as this terrible act of Russian imperialism. Picking a war with Russia, doing everything they can to saber rattle, trying to provoke them into shooting back, has been I've been cataloging this both in Russia and China for a long time now. It's pathetic. You know, it's like the ugly girl at the dance trying to just grab any guy to go dance with. That's what this is like. And they're not taking the bait because Putin is so experienced, but he knows how to handle these guys. And I tell you, I said this before, but American politicians are deflecting and projecting a lot of their own inadequacies on him. They would love to be as popular as this man. They'd love to be as strong as this man and principled as this man, but they're not. They work for corporations. They work for the regime. They work for the ADL, and that's all they are.
Oh, absolutely. And the idea of Putin and Groper Joe debating would be a theater of the absurd and a big loss for Groper Joe. Chris, why don't you jump in with the last question here? We're almost at the top of the hour.
Yeah, I agree. Putin does display much more of a sense of duty towards his people in terms of standing up for their rights or defending them. So, yeah, absolutely no doubt there. As far as popular support, he is far beyond Joe Biden could ever hope to be. I'd also like to say that I think the whole reason that these Jews are trying to get back the control of the Ukraine is because it was the scene of the crime where the Kaganovich led the Holodomor under the Stalin regime. And also it is the grain belt of Russia and pretty much Central Europe. So it's a pretty big strategic position, as well as it holds a foothold geographically between the Black and the Caspian Seas. So pipelines going into Europe or into China and Asia are really strong. Not necessarily China and Asia going through there, but more Europe. But it's a significant place as well, because it is a place where they can access through the Russian Navy into the Black Sea or onto the Mediterranean from there as well. So there's a lot of big issues there, a lot of inversion being used, because it has always been a Soviet possession. And they're saying that somehow or another, by them wanting to keep it against NATO's aggression, that somehow or another they were annexing the Ukraine in 2014. So it was a series of public relations stunts and media efforts and witch hunts to try to provoke Russia into a conflict, mostly because they were taking out ISIS in Syria. And if you remember, that was a big no-no. And Putin got a lot of hell for that, for stepping in on that. And also, I think that they really tried to shoot down that flight MH17 because it had 82 of the top 100 virologists on there. And they knew that these guys had to be taken out for the COVID scam that they're going to play in a couple of years, too. So I think there's a lot of strategic things that have happened, positioning, let's just say, that maybe makes sense with more hindsight.
You know, I forgot about the virology connection with that alleged shooting down of the plane. I've written on that long before COVID was around. And that part of it escaped me at the time. And only a handful of people have brought that up.
On Tim Kelly's show, something about that maybe a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was on. I don't remember. I've been on there. Regardless. But everything else you're saying is true.
One of the guys that my attention or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you.
Well, Azerbaijan is kind of taking the place. Ukraine is largely a lost cause as far as the West is concerned, which scares the Ukrainian ruling class to death. They have to invent a Russian threat to keep the money flowing. Azerbaijan has been colonized by Israel. Their defense industry is there. Taking over the government. The point is, of course, it borders Iran. And the northern part of any possible invasion of Iran is going to come from there. And that was what the Azerbaijan-Armenia war was all about. For the first time, Armenia lost this battle. Turkey has been building up the Turkey and Israel together, building up the Azeri economy and defense industry, mostly with Israeli companies. But, you know, you can't deny what's happened in Crimea versus the rest of Ukraine. Crimea is doing extremely well. They're like Belarus, you know, excellent medical care, very low infant mortality is lower than the U.S. So Belarus for that, I think so. And everything they do now is based on the ruble, which is backed by gold, a lot of it. And of course, the Chinese have been investing as well. They're in an excellent position. Keep in mind, the Russian economy, about 9% of its GDP is based on oil and gas. Norway and Canada are more dependent on oil revenues than Russia is. That's an old, intellectually lazy slogan that economists have come up with to make they could explain things very easy. Russian economic growth is not necessarily connected with oil prices, but oil prices go up with economic growth anyway. So it's a bigger piece part of their exports, but a relatively small part of their economy overall. But it is still strategic under state control, as it should be. This is given, you know, and all the gold that they've amassed, the huge budget surpluses. They have no debt. They're always in a surplus. All of this is being put aside. That's what financed the Sputnik vaccine, which I would never take any of them. But Sputnik vaccine has a far better track record than the Johnson & Johnson and Moderna and all the rest of them, and they're cheaper. They were not financed by private companies. They were financed from that very surplus fund. And so there's not a profit element there. A lot of the stuff that's happening now, because, you know, they've controlled the distribution of the vaccine, very few people are actually getting it. So now you have the Spanish, you have the Italians, you have San Marino, you have the Czechs having these huge contracts to get the Sputnik vaccine, and this is where all this stuff is now coming from to keep that from happening. I don't like any of the vaccines. I'm against them. But the Sputnik has a far better track record than the rest of them. So this is playing into this as well. Everything you said about Ukraine is true, but, you know, it's going to have to be – there's going to have to be a military government there, a Cossack government there in close union with Russia for it to ever rebuild. You know, there's more people with advanced degrees in Ukraine than per capita than any other country in the world. It's one of the worst tragedies I've ever come across in international politics. They're now fourth world hellhole, and they could be one of the world's most prosperous economies.
That is amazing. Well, Dr. Johnson, we've already burned through the whole hour. I want to thank you for coming on. What a great interview, informative and interesting as always. Maybe you could just share a quick final thought before we hit the top of the hour.
You know, my big weakness is self-promotion. I would go this whole time and never mention the fact that I have a website. I have 13 books out of it. Never, you know, I don't even think about it. To get my stuff, you know, of course, I function largely on donations. My website is rusjournal.org, rusjournal.org. I have a bunch of essays, my books, my Patreon page, everything is there. You can donate from there. But my radio broadcasting, The Orthodox Nationalist, is a lecture, hour-long lecture every Wednesday on Radio Albion. And then I'm with Sven for a half hour, usually international politics, from 12 to 12:30 every Thursday. So Radio Albion also has a blog that he set up for me that has all the same stuff that's on my website. All my books are there, Patreon, all this stuff, the donations. What I deal with here, this is a full-time job. This takes 25 years of nonstop work to get this level of insight. And of course, you know, I'm plagiarized by people every 5 minutes, which pisses me off. You know, it takes a tremendous amount of work to get here. This is a full-time job. So I do require donations. And of course, my Patreon is a big deal. My Patreon page has more to do with stuff I'm not normally known for, you know, music and stuff like that. You know, politics, you know, American politics. I do some international politics, but these are essays or things I'm not known for, and it's done pretty well. So my latest book is on medieval political theory, which is surprisingly relevant to our situation. Just came out on Ramada Books, and my book on the Soviet Union and Ukrainian nationalism came out last year. So I've been a tad busy, but you guys know how to be evocative. It's easy to be provocative, but being evocative is tough. And you guys do it very well. You get me going like very few people can get me going.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Well, we always enjoy talking with you. And so rushjournal.org is the place to get your books, right?
That's one place. The Radio Albion page would be another. In both places, it'll send you to where you need to go.
Great. Okay, Dr. Johnson, thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon. Thank you so much, and great interview. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, my friends.
Keep digging away, man. Don't let the small hats get you down.
Yeah, have a great weekend. You're really doing fantastic work.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, good stuff, man. That guy's solid.
No top of the hour break again.
Yeah, that was weird. No top of the hour break. Yeah, I kind of count on that happening. But at least it's in a way, it's good we had the time for him to get his information of his books and his website and all that. So that that hour just flew by unbelievably fast, man, which is always a good sign, I guess. So now we're on the third and final hour here on Operation Scorpio. And we're going to bring in a different guest, a man who, let's say, has a lot of guts. And a man, it has been said that he injects steroids directly into his man parts. That's what a badass he is sometimes. Steve from the UK. Steve, how are you, sir?
Thank you very much, Scorpio. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Giuseppe. And thank you for your guest. Great guest.
Yeah, well, Steve, maybe to start off, how are things there in the UK? What's the state of affairs there? The state of lockdown, or what's happening with the whole COVID hoax?
Yeah, sure. I want to talk about four things, like domestics, financials, geopolitical, and esoteric. But if we start with the domestic news in the UK, we're surrounded by Mossad wetware everywhere, with a Mossad monarch and Mossad publicans. We've had a protest in London, Unite for Freedom speech, and a protest with Piers Corbyn, Lawrence Fox, and some TV presenter Beverly Turner. So we can see the Jew trying to co-opt and create a controlled opposition within the UK narrative. So there's a few thousand people there. You can see people are tired. They want to come off lockdown. But the stats so far, apparently today, is there's 33.4 million jabs so far in the UK, half the population. And it worries me that these leaders of this controlled opposition, when we take a close look at people like Beverly Turner, they turn out to be a patron of the the Family Planning Association and of the Secular Society. And we see the middle class selling out everybody else, believing their virtue signaling, because they really do believe their shit. They really do believe it. They're full of it. Virtue signaling for a price and for a dollar, and to the rest of the UK to steer it along a particular dialectical narrative, I guess. So I would like people to be aware of that, that there's only one resistance, there's only one underground, as and always has been. And to be aware of the shills and the Judas goats. So that was kind of going on. Another thing, there was a guy, was it Oliver Bell, who is to be sentenced possibly for 15 years for tweets in 2017, whilst he also had a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook, apparently, a Cambridge student, 23, who said he wanted to exterminate the Jews. 15 years.
15 so years.
15 years. Not only that, and to be sentenced in June, apparently. Not only that, so we have not only a de facto Holocaust law by judicial precedent rather than statute, by abusing the Malicious Communications Act with Graham in Cornwall. But now it seems that if you call treason treason and we want execution for them, that gets you 15 years.
My God,
that's what
crazy.
They're saying. That's what they're saying. So it's going to be crunch time. So let's think about that guy as well. Mm-hmm. But not forgetting Piers Corbyn. So I'm not liking Piers Corbyn running that movement with Beverly Turner. And I think Piers Corbyn is an infiltrator. I think he's a Jew. And apparently Piers Corbyn wants to run for London mayor, the guy I spoke to not too long ago.
Oh, wow. Well, you don't have to be connected to get that job, do you? That's amazing.
Accepting the system. He doesn't know, or he knows, like, is malevolently controlling the opposition, that the system's coming down anyway because of facts on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rearranging doctors, yeah?
Giuseppe, why don't you jump in? You have a question for old Steve there?
Steve, what are your thoughts on the continued implementation of the interplanetary file system, IPFS?
I think that we're moving forward as a bit of a scene. I have gate crashed Chris Trautner's comms meeting, and I was pushing Freedom Slips, Revolution Radio, and Mammy Shit, and a couple of others like Timothy Kelly, the Myths of the 20th Century Crew, and Dr. Matt Raphael Johnson, funny enough, in his piece on the Ukraine. And they loved it. For them, you're like the user base. You're like the end users. You're the direct target demographic that I was trying to push to the coding scene. Yeah, like a user case application, you know, a use case application. And they loved it. And I thought we could maybe expand this because you can trade value encrypted as well. It is really versatile. And you can have file uploads in IPFS, which are government proof and unstoppable. So we talked about some of the logistics of how that's managed and how we can push that to be more simpler to the end users. Things like an Android APAC, for example, something easy to manage and use. And I was pushing the fact that you can create your own tokens. So I've created my own coin, as it happened, an Unobtainium Tether. And you can trade that encrypted on the Bitcoin Cash network served up on IPFS. And it's unstoppable trading of the little guy with no middleman, no tax man, no customs and excise to anyone in the world on the planet. And I was maybe pushing to Chris Chapman and the free speech scene and the permissionless software foundation that maybe there's a free speech scene in Japan somewhere or China, because apparently the great firewall of China managed to block the API on this wallet, and he managed to develop an IPFS API to get around that. So this Chinese woman could actually use the wallet and her own tokens to send back and forth Bitcoin Cash or an SLP token of her choosing. So I found that was really progressive for the little guy and perhaps profound. These guys are working in sync with the free speech scene and freedom in general. So I really do push Chris Trautner and the Permissionless Software Foundation and how they want to, I also told them to directly target authors for their PDF documents. There's a few authors come to me and say, you know, do you any publishers? I was like, well, I know one in Moldova. So maybe, you know, pushing the authors to the PDFs uploads, pushing the jocks towards the podcast MP3 uploads to IPFS, and working with the Permissionless Software Foundation, how the user end could be made much simpler. And for the web admins and their websites to use IPFS links, so you won't even need a VPN. So they're unsensible, and I like to push this site, unsensiblepublishing.com, for your white label-based template. It's worth checking out. So I also, in the three parts, I concentrate on the authors. I push the authors, I push the jocks, and I push the web admins to the PSF.
Steve, give that website again, uncensorablepublishing.com. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you want to look at that because he's showing you a prototype, yeah, of his more elaborate ones, more well coded. But he just shows you a white label prototype of what's capable for web admins. And it's government proof. They were using it, IPFS, in the Spanish sort of thing recently, where they had the Catalan separatists. They were using it in Myanmar as well. So it's an up-and-coming thing that's been around, but it's become sort of a mature technology now and something that people are more familiar with using. So I kind of like wanted to push that with those guys, try and bring the two scenes together. The guys in the back end, what would No Agenda so? Dude's name Ben, yeah? And to get them on board so we can no longer be censored by the Jew, and governments and bankers, and to actually start making some progress in gaining might not just in terms of physical defense, but also commercial might as well, which is a form of sexual energy, to be able to band these together and to have a force multiplier so we can fight them asymmetrically. So I'm all for the little guy, and I think great inroads have been made. So I just wanted to sort of push that to you, Giuseppe.
Hey, Steve, while I got you, do you mind if I ask you, is that similar to like Theta Coin and like broadband communication for cryptocurrency? Is that a similar concept, or is this going beyond that? Or can you maybe explain that to me and maybe some of the viewers?
Yeah, it goes beyond that. It is not really like a coin or like a crypto token, what you're saying. Although Filecoin does seem to work quite nicely with it. It's a much more efficient internet. So rather than having like a central server, yeah, and apparently the PSF don't agree with anything centralized, which is really in line with what me and you, Scorpio, were saying about having everything decentralized,
yes.
Right? And in designing my coin as well, in when I'm verifying the icons to my token, there was like two databases being run, and that was kind of like centralization. And it was interesting to see Chris Troutner didn't like that. He didn't want that centralization there with his NFTs, for example, or his own PSF token. So I thought that was quite cool. So I really do believe that this is what the sort of advantage we need, a break that we need. So we can mass roll it out for the movement more than ourselves, and therefore give the government and the Jew effective struggle and effective opposition.
Yeah, that's great. I really like how you've got your finger on the pulse of these new technologies and platforms to prevent censorship. Now, let me ask you, let's say, you know, in the future, I think one scenario is the government's just going to require an internet ID to log on to the internet. I think that'll be the final solution, so to speak. Would these platforms provide a way around such a draconian measure?
Yeah, I think there is movement towards that. There's something called idbox.online. where you were having like a self-sovereign identity, where you essentially operate in a dark net of an internet of things, where you possess your own identity rather than the government sort of making you have one, yeah, and you're adopting it through coercion. It's kind of important also because it's not just the government and the Jew, there's also the criminal element as well. So really crypto, and I'm going to have to sort of elaborate here because I'm bit of a pro with crypto a little bit. Bitcoin is not blockchain. The crypto world is not owned, all of it, by the Jews. They just target the top 10 coins and top 10 market caps and to control and steer the narrative. But if they were to buy every coin, they'd go bankrupt. And certainly with the privacy coins, I'm not just talking about Monero or even WoW Monero. I'm talking about Pirate Coin, AARR. These are claiming to be impregnable coins, and they're rocketing in value, and they say privacy is cash. So what we're seeing at the moment is those who are mask wearers adopting fiat, yeah, they're the ones who are like possessed, whereas those who've taken control and possession of their own self-sovereignty and are indeed developing and have been, there's a struggle in that Wild West scene in the crypto world, in its colloquial sense. So yes, crypto has been co-opted in the sense of their Bitcoin and the leading coins, and they're trying to steer that scene. But no, they don't have control. No, I still think it's a Wild West. And I think people who say that about crypto don't know anything about crypto.
Interesting. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in, man?
Steve, it does appear to me as well to be the Wild West. And what can people do who want to take their power back and become more sovereign, but they're not super technically sophisticated? What can they do to get in this game?
I would say establish a counter-dollar narrative and a counter-Jew narrative. So I sent Chris a link to do with BlackRock. And how that, you know, that hedge fund I mentioned you with like $1.3 trillion or sure. Something in it, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm all over BlackRock. I know,
well, imagine that, Chris, going into Bitcoin.
Sure.
Using Elon Musk as a front man, right? And I think that's kind of what the play they're doing. So they're using all these dollars. No one else is really getting it, but the banks are shoving it into the crypto world because it is a Wild West, and they seek power and control. The control of commercial value. The Jew hates losing money, hates it.
Hey, Steve, I was going to ask, weren't you saying that like 90% of the Bitcoin is held by 12 wallets or something like that? With a market cap and a control like that, you can pretty much – the price is irrelevant for the 10% that you're talking about that would actually even be able to sell in or out. If the 90% of the market share was controlled and lined up to the same purpose or holding firm or manipulating the price, I mean, you could make it a bajillion dollars and it wouldn't really matter, you know, right?
Absolutely. And I think also you have to remember that 80% of Bitcoin is mined by the Chinks. So when you look at that, you think, 10% is by the Czech Republic and the rest of the world is over that. So I think we have to be careful of that narrative. So, for example, I've done some business with the Iranians. Yeah, they have an Iranian tether to the rial called the Tumam, 10,000 rial. They're very honest. They like our seeing. So I showed them all the stuff like that. I says, you know, no Iranian ever called me nigger. And they've helped me and I've helped them. And I actually quite like the Iranians. I get on well with them. They don't like the Jew. So when I'm looking at that, that's a counter dollar narrative. And what Dr. Matt Raphael Johnson said about them, Rothschild taking Azerbaijan for a launching platform to invade Iran, I can believe that. I can believe that. That's exactly what's going to happen. Exactly what's going to happen. That's exactly what Rothschild's going to do. So, like, US dollar tether as well. Like, there's only one single board that run it. The Dow and US dollar tether is awful. Ethereum is awful. The gas fees are huge. So don't use the mainstream of, say, the crypto world, okay? Try to adopt a counter-dollar narrative like a privacy coin, a decent one, like Monero, or maybe Pirate. Pirate coin is up and coming. Something impregnable from the Jew. So I think that's how we do it. And we form alliances and we work out our differences and we learn about each other, right? And we use things like, I'm using something called a Zapit wallet, which is a nice user-friendly wallet to handle Bitcoin Cash, that all the Bangladeshis, all the Indians, all everyone, the Africans, the Chinese, all these people, is a very simple wallet for them. And for them, crypto is second nature. Taking their own value. People who are in the fiat world, yeah, are going to lose it all, right? Biden is sat there and he's again, Biden coming out against the Armenian genocide, yeah? That is a Rothschild move against Turkey, a Rothschild move. He serves the Rothschilds, does Biden. His son is a wrong'un. Why Putin doesn't come out, for example, and just show the photos, say, there you go, there's your son, Hunter Biden. He's a complete and utter wrong'un. That's why the Ukraine for the gas fields, right? Why doesn't Putin put that on Russia Today? What about his rabbi as well? What about Putin's rabbi? I like to have a quote from that actually at some point, yeah? These are questions that need asking, and I think that the more we can combine the commercial value and the free speech scene, which is an educated and informed narrative, being empowered with actual commercial value and getting outside the BRICS versus IMF narrative to where the little guy can do what he wants, where the little guy keeps his own value, where the little guy can go and visit and do what he wants within his clan structure, his family and his nation, his tribe, without being having to be jabbed.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. Someone in the chat room is asking about Pirate Chain. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, it's an up and coming. See, the thing is about Monero, it's to do with the address system and I think it's like a 13th man problem. What the fuck? It's a famous philosophical problem it's based on. But anyway, the addresses are on there, but they can't guess the government which address it is. But with WoW Monero, it makes out an exponential number. And after about 13, it doesn't matter because even with a supercomputer, you wouldn't be able to get it. But with Pirate, they're claiming to be impregnable, but it's on a central service. And I'm not sure I trust it all, you know, because I'm kind of in Chris's camp a little bit. So I only keep a little bit in crypto. It's about risk management. So you have like, say, 30% in gold and silver, right? You might have a few in mining stocks, for example, yeah? You might have a bit in your own particular crypto that you're used to and that you use. And in my case, Bitcoin Cash, because it works well with IPFS. It's enabled me to create my own token. So people can go buy my own UNO tokens if they wanted and support my cause. I can reward them for it. It's a non-parasitical relationship, a non-predatorial relationship. And that is real progress. And we just have to back that up with the balls to defend what we've got. There's always those people who want to steal your shit because they never made it to start with.
Right, right. Good point. Chris, why don't you jump in, man? Go ahead.
Steve, you're nailing it, bud. Hey, I'm not really a big, proponent of cryptocurrency, not really an advocate of that. I'm more from the Austrian school of sound money and gold and silver and checks and balances and things like that, balanced budgets. I think that we're really seeing a schism in the world scene as far as the which path to take in terms of global direction. And obviously the Biden's going towards the Keynesian London school of print more, you know, mobilize debt, things like this. And obviously the Russians and the Chinese are maybe a little more pragmatic with the Austrian sense in terms of reserves and gold and silver and, you know, assets and commodities. And you know, pretty much they seem to be ahead of the curve as far as that type of stuff is concerned. What are your thoughts maybe on this breakdown? And what do you see as far as a way for the people that are maybe trapped in these Keynesian countries to prepare themselves, whether it's in the physical metal sector or the commodity sector or even land? Or possibly even crypto sector. Do you have any advice for maybe some rookies or people that are not so informed on some of these things and share your expertise or your opinions with us?
Keep fighting and never, ever, ever, ever stop.
Ever. Right on, brother.
I think on that level, I think obviously each individual is in their own context. We're not all born equal. You know, what can certain people do? You know, we make choices around us. Do we leave certain people to their fates? Do we stand like men on our last stands and choose the ground we stand on? So think about your destiny if you're in those particular countries. They want to pen everyone in. So the latest media war propaganda is to do with India, that there's 5,000 deaths every day. And I think they're penning countries in and they're trying to turn them into death camps, essentially. Now, if you've got a population like India, 1.2 billion, and the plates have stopped spinning and the services stop and the country's infrastructure starts breaking down, then that is a recipe for absolute chaos. And indeed, you could argue that is a black magic rite straight out of the Talmud. Be Talmud aware.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought... Dr. Johnson made an interesting observation that, you know, this system that we're under in the West here could collapse. The way he described America, I think there's a lot of similarities between what America is doing now and what the Soviet Union was doing, you know, basically having fake job reports, fake production reports, fake money, fake everything. And at some point that catches up and, you know, there can be a real problem. What do you see as, like, you know, if you had to get out your crystal ball over there, what do you think faces the West here in the next few years?
Egregores. So when the powerless feel powerless and they don't know what to do, and that's where the Judas coats come in, they will always seek the safety and the comfort of an egregore, something larger than themselves, yeah? So the way conditioning and advertising works, it makes you feel part of something for a dollar, yeah? And I think that's what is kind of like the real enemy, the ability not to think as an individual mind, not to be able to come up with your own view, not being able to think and having the freedom to even have a thought, because there's some dark shit coming. I mean, the latest papers I've been looking at are to do with the synthetic life that's being created right now. So they've taken stem cells from this frog and they've essentially bred these to create a synthetic life form with a synthetic genome for the first time. And it makes shapes. Now, this thing died after 10 days because it had no digestive system. But they were able essentially to take, like, I don't know, a bit of your finger, grow it and mutate it into a whole new synthetic form. I think that's what's coming. I think I think also the nanotechnology as well. Don't take the swab test. Okay, I think the test is the infection, and I think the vaccine is the bullet. And it's removing that previous goyim generation and bringing in a new goyim, the goyim 2.0.
Yeah, the genetically engineered goyim, the servile and docile form. Yeah, those are good points, Steve. Giuseppe, Matt, why don't you jump in, man? Go ahead.
Steve, first question is, you mentioned a moment or three ago the Zap wallet. Is that from zaphq.io?
Zapapit.io, Zap It.
Oh, Zap It. Okay, let me change.
It's the leading SLP wallet, and I rate it. So they help me develop my own coin and like the infrastructure that goes with it on Telegram as well. So I've got lots of a few bots working for me. I find quite powerful financial architecture that I've put together. So I've given them some thanks on my credit. Because I had to give some credits out. Yeah, and shout out to Ali as well down the Iranian sector. They're sound. And another thing, the Russians as well. Since we're talking about the Russians, yeah, why doesn't Yorkshire do a deal with the Russians? Yeah, if they remember the old Yorkshire, I mean, beware of Putin, beware. You know, he's got a Chabad sort of handler. Okay, so, you know, we have to beware of Putin. But if you just like put Putin aside for 1 second, whether he's a Jew, the Russian people are related and are friends. They're natural allies of Yorkshire. They're natural allies of the North. They belong in the North with us. Why would you have this anti-Russian sentiment just because Nat Rothschild wants to make a few billion off of Ukrainian gas fields? Yeah, I don't know. We need an informed population separating their commercial value, not paying the government or the Jew anything, and doing a deal with the Russians, yeah, saying, actually, let's do some trade review off the books, yeah, let's actually benefit each other, let's cooperate and learn about each other and reduce the alienation between our people. And we should go kill the Jew, get the nuclear codes off them, and prevent nuclear war, and target all those nukes at the synagogues, lodges, all them lot, get rid of them once and for all time, and let the North unite. Let the North unite. Don't fight the Russians. Iranians are sound, right? And I don't know about North Korea. I've got mixed views upon that, yeah? But if you just focus on those two, I think I'll be quite happy to have a nice future there rather than a bleak, doomed future run by the Jew.
Well, yeah, that's certainly a better option than the future run by the Jew. So we've heard Steve's the short version of Steve's plan for a modern utopia. That's a very interesting set of circumstances there, Steve. Chris, why don't you jump in, man? Go ahead.
I was going to say, Steve, you got my vote, man. I agree with you on a lot of this stuff. It's amazing to see how the world has been departmentalized according to this this theater that is being presented to us by the mainstream media, the politician and the bankers and the intelligence communities. I almost think that that's what the National Security Act really was to isolate the citizens from their assets, from their ability to stand for their labor rights and their wages and their value and their property ownership and things like this. And as we talked earlier in the show, it's almost like that we are being transitioned into property. And I think that this vaccine, by its introduction into the veins of this intellectual property, that maybe that would be the shoehorn by which these technocrats and these oligarchs would probably, the robber barons, would seek to control us legally through our biometrics. What are your thoughts? Kind of like Monsanto, you know what I mean? With corn?
I think that the control of the ID is kind of like a tool, yeah? What you call, like a psychic tool. When we look a bit deeper at the more spiritual element, yeah, as to why they want that control, yeah, I find then things sort of follow on from that. So we need to deflect and infiltrate and destroy them. We need to stop their projection, their protection and procurement of power. And it is about power. So how we express ourselves in our internal power and our inner sanctums and how we express ourselves externally with each other and what we identify with as an egregore, and we're all full of them. I think we have to sort of look at who handles that tool. Like it's a Jew god. You have to understand it's alien. It's an alien god with an alien language and an alien destiny eating souls. That's what it is. That's what it does. You've got all kinds of label of what it is, but you look at what the fruits of what it is. And you look at the intentions behind that tool, what seeks that power and that control. And we find ourselves having to invent ever novel, ingenious tactics to get around it. But it's always there, that agenda, as long as we don't destroy them. It's always there. It keeps coming back like a slime mold. What Blackbird Nine says, a slime mold, it keeps coming back. We've got to get rid of it once and for all. So we need to deflect and infiltrate and destroy them. It's a demonic force. It is a spiritual battle. This is not of this realm. It is a Jew god.
Yeah, I agree. This is a spiritual battle, no question about it. Yeah, Giuseppe, go ahead, man.
I think Steve is 100%. I've been saying for a while, where is our warrior class? Why does Bill Gates still draw breath? Why does Lady Rothschild, Poopy Pants, whatever her string of phony pretentious names are, why isn't she dropped into Somalian rape compound and allowed to make the best of it? I mean, they literally have to be wiped off the face of the earth. And there's no other way. I mean, this sadly, the Goyim sheep are cattle and they're cowards, and nobody's doing what needs to be done to get that snowball, which will start as the little snowball, and then it needs to start rolling down the hill and become the proverbial avalanche until they are done. And I think the rest of us, real humans, can work it all out.
Yeah, except the mask wearers. So when you have the Jews, they create a disease, and that disease is an aggregor, right? And it's got off, and it's got a momentum of its own. They're all wearing masks, right? And that is a choice. You have to understand they choose evil because they get a power trip out of it. It's a little gratification, little neurological gratification, a little dopamine hit, a virtual signaling that the powerless have over other people they like to purge on. Okay, those who are free, those who they envy, yeah. So they feel evil, and that evil makes them feel good because they had a little hit of power, Giuseppe. A little hit of power there. It's the mask wearers and the egregores we have to watch, and they're the ones that they'll probably be arming against us.
That's an excellent point, Steve. They are basically have no spiritual practice. The bizarre, as Chris likes to say, inversion is such that they are cowards, they are weaklings, and yet and they are victims in their mentality, and yet they have flipped it in an inversion to make cowardice be a badge of a virtue and a badge of honor, that being a coward and I don't wear this mask for me, I wear it for you, is so ridiculous. And yet that's, you're right, they are a threat. But on the other hand, because they are so weak, they're going to go whichever way the wind blows. And if we start blowing a mighty wind, they will come in line.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I agree also, too, what you said about the hostility. I'm seeing more and more hostility from the mask crowd, dirty looks and people even having the outright nerve to try to tell me to put a mask on, you know, a complete stranger, never seen me before. So I'm seeing increased hostility. But I agree with Giuseppe too, that, if the wind changes direction, they'll move right along with it. Like the mindless, people they are. So it's hard to say which way that's going to go, but right now these people are increasingly becoming, our enemies, whether we like it or not.
Absolutely.
Chris, why don't you jump in, man? Go ahead.
Yeah, I've done videos going back 5-6 years talking about this stuff coming, that they're going to weaponize the well-intentioned versus the obtuse. They're going to mobilize the super soldiers, the Karens that have been programmed by the MKUltra, Mockingbird, and even the Phoenix program and whatnot. This is truly the inversion or the takeover, the demoralization, the debasement from within. And they are trying to assault everything that this country stands for in terms of regulatory authority against these robber barons, trying to take down the last bastion of justice or authority against their oligarchy. And this is why they've infiltrated it from within and have really turned it into the beast that it is. I think that there's good people serving this mechanism, and I think that these people really need to come to this awareness with a quickness, and if we work together, we can pretty much turn this thing against itself and hopefully do the right thing with it.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be amidst a fire sale of souls.
Yeah, that's very, very poetic. Yeah. I like that. Giuseppe, your idea of dropping her into the Somalian rape camp is catching steam already in the chat. Good idea there.
Yeah, she is such a vulgar, pretentious, obnoxious, rich bitch. And, you know, so much of the normies, their existence is based on symbols. And what a great pay-per-view event that would be. It would fill all our coffers.
That'd be better than WrestleMania 7, that's for sure.
No doubt. I'd like to get back into Steve's and continued thoughts on this crimes against humanity, crimes against the divine, a synthetic life mutation. I mean, you could argue that the early effort was the Morgellons, and that is a type of very primitive technical life that's used to infect certain test patients horribly. And now they're doing it, and they're also creating these human monkey and human porcine hybrids that they can grow organs so we can keep the Heinrich Kissinger going to 130. And it's just this is all been done before, and it didn't end well if you think about the Tower of Babel scenario. So
God's creation they want to pervert before they destroy it,
right?
So then pure Satanism is like defiance of God and his natural law.
Right.
And what you're saying is the very literal end of humanity.
It's already underway. I mean, unless there's dramatic changes, it's not even the vaccine. It's the toxicity from glyphosate and then 2,4-D, which is Agent Orange being used domestically, and now this dicamba. This infection is generational. It may be bad and infiltrate grandma or great grandma, but this is being passed via generational birth, and it is going to kill granddaughter and great granddaughter, and this is on a massive scale, and the vaccines are just like the cherry on the sundae. What's already mostly guaranteed a human extinction event is the insane use of those deadly toxins.
It's like something from The Thing, John Carpenter, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
I think, because I'll keep it focused, I mean, they want to kill the old people. They want to kill the workers. They want to kill the soldiers. They want to kill the farmers. They want to poison the youth. Because then they'll just be left to pick up the pieces. That's why the world will be handed. They play people off against each other until there's no one left. And I think if we just focus on that and we bring a wider understanding to old people, to workers, to soldiers, to farmers, to the youth, that you're next on the list. And we show them who it is, and perhaps even empower them with how to maybe get around it and avert such catastrophes. We might be able to mobilize large segments of distance within the population. There's a lot of people like Lonnie who are a bit fatalist, you know. I agree with a lot of his mechanics, but whether the government's all powerful or not, and the surveillance state is all powerful or not, I don't know, because they're full of Muppets. You know, they're not inclined to sort of individualist thinking. They're inclined to sly thinking. That's the only thing they know is slyness and deviousness, because they've studied it for hundreds of years. So all they study is slyness. So when you talk about the pig, you talk about the military and intelligence services, you're talking about duplicity and slyness, and technology as well. They're like invisible bullets. So when we're talking about technologies like nanotechnology on those swabs and those little starfish clips,
yeah,
reacting to heat, these are invisible weapons. And the Jew wants invisible weapons because it's hard to counteract something you can't see. it also synergizes very well with propaganda. So they're saying, oh, it's the COVID causing the deaths. No, it's not. It's those tests you're giving everybody causing those deaths.
You know, Steve, I thought you just hit upon a really important point, too, is that, the people within these government structures are often completely without vision. They have very little to no creativity, and it's full of incompetent people who wouldn't be able to survive in the private sector. They just show up to work, and as long as they don't burn the building down, they get to keep their job. That's going to be a great point of weakness moving forward for these all-powerful government structures. I think that's a very important point you made, man. And, Giuseppe, I really appreciate how you're taking this conversation into this nanotechnology and this Dr. Frankenstein tinkering with genetics. It's not going to end well, and it's going against God's creation and God's basic laws. This is not going to end well. But I guess my question for both you, Giuseppe and Chris, is I'm sure you guys have seen the videos of the people putting a mask underneath a microscope, and then breathing on it, and you see these little fibers start to move around. What are your thoughts on that? And what do you think those things are? And, just maybe take it away and see what your perception is of that.
Well, my perception is I look at Occam's razor, and it's, the conditions in these factories in China are so disgusting and so dirty that it's probably some type of just local parasite that is everywhere, and it's just in the bales. I don't even know what the fiber is. They make those cheap masks out, some kind of a cheap paper. It can't be real paper because it's too expensive. So whatever they're using is their raw material is completely parasitically infected. And so I think that's what it is. I would doubt that the Chinese are sophisticated enough at that level to create some type of Morgellon in there. So I use Occam's razor in this instance.
I like that kind of pragmatic thinking. Steve, what do you think is up with that?
With what? Sorry, be specific.
Have you seen the videos of the people? They put one of these blue masks underneath a microscope, and then you see these sort of black fibers, and then, you breathe on it and the thing starts to move around seemingly on its own. What are your thoughts on that?
I think there's a lot of government propaganda trying to pollute the scene, right? Mm-hmm. The paper that I saw was with the little starfish nanomachines from an Italian scientist, Whether I'm going to trust somebody on YouTube or not from seven different angles, I think it should be investigated, and everybody's got a microscope. Surely you could go buy one and just have a look. Look for yourself. Where's the first thought of actually doing your own research in a way? If you think it's observable, he's whacked it on YouTube, well, go get a mask then, put it under a microscope and have a look.
Well, what's cool, Steve, is a lot of people are doing that, and there's now, hundreds of videos where if you put that mask over, some steaming water, or it's even better than just breathing on it, and somehow that activates what I believe is just a indigenous parasite from whatever the fabric is that they use to make those disgusting masks.
Yeah. This is good pragmatic thinking and not jumping onto a conspiracy bandwagon without critical thought. Chris, what do you think about that, man?
Well, I'm going to tear us onto that bandwagon, I think. No, I do think that they are developing nanotech and things that are beyond the scope of modern science. I almost think that you have to have a military clearance to understand these things or to have access to the research and the data of the things that we are even talking about. But we are the only few that are probably sitting here with the courage and nerve to present these things to others in a serious and rational manner and try to present these at least as possibilities to research and to investigate in the absence of any sort of diligence from the mainstream media or the elected officials. So I have to say that to some extent, we are being gaslit by many terms by these official narratives. And I think that we really have weathered the storm, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think that you guys are very much onto something here. I don't think this is a conspiracy theory. I think this is a full spectrum assault on what's left of human nature. And I think if we don't make a stand, these guys are going to run us over.
Right.
Yeah. And a word of advice. Don't let the money buy your conscience. Don't let the money buy the conscience. If it buys their conscience, you literally go blam and you put a £5 note in their mouth. Simple as that. If they've money, it's for their conscience, right?
So
when we're giving advice to all these people, like in India, for example, all these other nations, what leaf could they take? Take that. Don't let the money buy your conscience. That's number one. Number one. Is it Jewish?
You know, that's a great point. And because, you know, society's been structured in a way where money is our God. You know, we're supposed to believe that money is the most important thing in life. And obviously it's important the way things are set up, but having a moral code and a higher source that dictates your behavior is certainly more important. I totally agree.
One thing I'd like to interject is Chris is absolutely right about they are going pedal to the metal as far as nanoweapons and this smart dust, which is now supposedly a hybrid living smart dust. And that's all occurring. But what I'm saying about with those little parasites in China, I mean, in my 15 years as an Oriental medicine practitioner, I won't touch a Chinese formula made in China because it's so full of contaminants and lead and heavy metals. And I only use and sell to my patients vetted natural and organic formulas made in the U.S. And there is a company called Con Herbs out of San Francisco that some of the stuff grows better in China, and they have like their own mercenary force that protects their fields that they're growing, and then they have their own processing. They don't want anything to do with the Chinese, and yet that's how they get around that. Because I mean, China is a disgusting country, and it's sad that they've been, you know, dehumanized into this hive mind kind of cowardly bullshit. And you think back to the great Chinese dynasties, like the era of the Yellow Emperor and Lao Tzu, and then even the Confucius dynasty, and now they've de-evolved into the subhuman chinks that they are now. It's really, really a tragedy.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good point. Good comment here in the chat room on Revolution Radio. Tud is saying the core problem boils down to the Goy individualism versus Jew collectivism. And I think that's true in a lot of levels. And this also goes back to this idea of communitarianism and this sort of slave mindset that they want to put humanity into. You know, my mass protects you and your mass protects me and all that.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
We're all in on this together.
Yeah. Together we can beat this virus, you know.
Make the influenza great again. Make the influenza great again.
Yeah, it's a miracle. There's no influenza anymore. It's a miracle, guys.
Heroes mask up.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, just because, you know, people are individualists, again, I hear this sort of philosophical point being made on the scene. Does that make us weak? No. So when we look structurally and then we look psychically as well as spiritually, we're all kind of united in the struggle spiritually. We're all working with God and the divine. And then psychically, we have to be cleverer than the Jew and understand the Jew and the demon that controls and pulls the puppet strings of the Jew possession.
And individuals can form into ethnic tribes like we always did until the Jew destroyed that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So natural organization is inbuilt into the evolution of life and the movement of the life wave through time. Organization is an inbuilt principle. It's a natural thing. And I think that is something the Jew doesn't want.
No, absolutely. That's why we have, you know, we're constantly being told to socially distance and have all your interactions on a screen. Be afraid of your fellow human being that might have COVID. This is all a deliberate attempt to break down people essentially getting together and discussing what's happening to the world. Because I've found, too, once you get people together, even so-called normies have a lot of questions about what's going on, and they're more suspicious than ever about this entire thing. They know, they seem to intuitively know something is wrong now. So,
well, can I just talk about on ethnic lines? So
go ahead.
If you're talking about the UK and the UK perspective, yeah, then Scotland should claim independence. The Scottish think like that, right? They hate everyone. Yorkshire should immediately follow. So that's an important strategic move to be made in that collective consciousness of Scottish people and Yorkshire people. Okay, Norway will be watching, so will the Irish. We have to bear in mind this will be triggered, this localism in terms of that consciousness when we talk tribal thinking, Giuseppe, by invasion. And they will naturally reach for effective armed struggle, but it's a more nuanced fight. It's a more of a fight of diplomacy, yeah, of scholarship, of enriching and raising the human condition on many levels, not just kicking the fuck out of them. We have to raise our people's awareness for the quality of who they are, what they actually are. What do you stand for? So I push a 74 county sovereignty movement. And I think in the UK perspective, and maybe you could say something in America or wherever you guys are, for me, the key issue here is to Scotland for breaking off. I want Scotland out, right? That'll be the key for Yorkshire. Yorkshire will have that signal, right? And then all bets are off. And I think that is a good wicket to perhaps move towards.
Interesting. Well, again, this hour has just flown by just like the other 2 hours. And we're down to the last 5 minutes or so. So, Steve, why don't you give me some final thoughts? And then I want to get a final thought from Giuseppe and Chris as well. So go ahead. How do you want to wrap this, man?
I just want to mention those with legal problems. So Alison being banged up, Graham and his family, Oliver Bell, and the others who are in prison that we forget about. I want you to value your small businesses locally. You're going to need them to survive. Get rid of the drones and the CCTV. Don't let the money buy your conscience. And I just want to keep it to that, just to remember the prisoners, remember the locals and the people around you, the people that matter, and to eliminate the signs and symptoms of mass surveillance and Jewish thought forms and egregores like CCTV, for example, and all the rest of it. So if you can just keep it on that, I think that's what I'd like to end it on.
Great. Giuseppe, final thoughts, sir.
I'd like to echo Steve's sentiment that Graham Hart is a hero. Alison Chablot is a hero. Alfred Schaefer in prison in Germany is a hero. And I can't think of the other people's names right now. I'm low glucose. I need to get some food soon. But in German prisons, they're heroes. And we are doing our part. And we're going to need a lot of heroes to solve this day. And the other thing is, you know, the human immune system is very robust and adaptable, and and we are all energy after all. A lot of this is an illusion. So if you meditate and truly believe you're not going to get sick, and put an energy protective field around you, as well as eliminate processed sugar, eliminate processed foods, get plenty of exercise, eat natural and organic whenever you can, and get plenty of sleep. You know, as long as you're not injected with that toxin, there's a good chance that even if it's an airborne transmissible, it will never take root in your system, because your own strong immune system will win the day. So you just gotta realize this is a biological war, and number one, keep yourself healthy, and number two, we really need a warrior class to separate Bill Gates' head from the rest of his body, similar with Fauci, and with hundreds of thousands of these Talmudic satanic chicken swingers that are literally trying to wipe us off the face of the earth. We need to eliminate them first.
Great final thoughts. Very cogent. And I'm visualizing Bill Gates' head on a stick. I like it. Chris, final thoughts, sir.
Yeah, I agree with Giuseppe. Bannon was right a long time ago when he said that. I've been saying it for a while, too. I think that the people that have sold us out in the 90s in terms of the foreign free trade agreements and stuff, when NAFTA or permanent normalization of trade with China, have been the same ones that have constructed these tough on crime bills and these for-profit prisons, and then use these measures to try out these vaccines and these medicines and these draconian measures of social enforcement on populations, the alpha male population. So you're wondering where all the warrior classes went, as they were systematically hunted down by the legal system in the asymmetric legal system and turned out for standing up for their principles, or in many cases trying to feed their families outside the system, outside the grid. And this is really what happens to people that, that try to do that. And this is why they do this to these people, to try to put them in, into fear, or put people without that, that courage into the notion of never wanting to try that themselves. So they try to make what is understood, not discussed, and put that element of fear in this draconian witch hunt ordeal system on everybody, so that everybody remains on eggshells in their own stomping ground. This is not an accident. Just understand it's cold calculation, and don't give them the fear, because that is their instrument by which they keep you enslaved, and you enslave yourselves with it too.
Great point. Yeah, and this is the time to lose fear. They want us to be afraid. We need to do the exact opposite. We're playing for all the marbles this time, guys. And I just want to remind everyone too, man, come aboard Revolution Radio and become a sponsor. Come on revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com. Become a Patreon member. Do what you can to keep this bastion of free speech going. And you can also scroll down to the bottom of the front page, and you'll see a physical address where you can mail in donations the old-fashioned way. And remember, no one's being paid. The management is not being paid, nor are the hosts. We're all doing this to try to get the message out there, and it's really a labor of love. If you're going dark.